Let's talk about this. You know, especially when you live down here in the South, the Tennessee Valley Authority, rural electrification, all these made a huge difference to the South. And if the South wants to know why they're political power now, it's because we gave them the electricity. Because no big business would have done it. There's no corporation that would have undergone this massive program. And the same with the highway system. And that was started by Eisenhower. And Eisenhower was a Republican, true, but God, compared to these guys, he was very liberal. It's us. We're the problem. We're the problem. We have to wipe out not just the Republicans, we have to wipe out conservatism. Conservatism. I got to say it right. I've been using conservatism. That's wrong. Conservatism. It's the scourge of history under any name. The false idea, and it's a false idea that says one group of people is inherently better than others because of who their father was or because of how much money or political power they managed to accumulate. Whether you're talking about Egyptian pharaohs, Roman emperors, European, Arab, or Asian monarchies, laissez-faire capitalists of the industrial age, fascist dictators, communist premiers, or modern-day neoconservatives, the result is always the same. A few people get a lot, and everybody else fights for scrap. The entire ideology is a disease, and some diseases need to be cut out. What we need is a drastic change in the way humankind operates as a global community, and weak Democrats winning a few House seats in 2006. Nice as that.
Head on Radio News, I'm Bruce Birch. The U.S. Capitol and Rayburn Congressional Office Building were put under lockdown as Capitol Hill police searched to investigate the sound of gunfire in the garage of the Rayburn Congressional Office Building across from the Capitol. Sergeant Kimberly Schneider said that earlier several tactical units searched the entire Rayburn building, including the firing range. Sounds that seemed to be gunfire were reported to have come from the lowest level of the Rayburn office garage, labeled G3. Reports of shots fired had been called into Capitol Hill Police during the 10 o'clock hour. The gunfire ended up being nothing more than an air hammer being used in an elevator shaft. Lieutenant General Michael Hayden is now the nation's 20th CIA director. He was confirmed today after a very lopsided 78-15 vote by the Senate. Hayden replaces Porter Goss, who resigned 2 weeks ago amid a widening CIA scandal. Breaking with the White House, Senate Judiciary Chairman Arlen Specter voted against the four-star general. The Pennsylvania Republican said he was protesting the administration's failure to inform Congress of intelligence operations, particularly its warrantless surveillance program. A new Zogby Interactive poll finds that U.S. voters are more distrustful than ever of political and corporate leaders. Only 3% believe Congress is trustworthy, 7% think business leaders are, 24% say George W. Bush can be trusted, and 29% trust the courts. An ongoing military investigation supports allegations that U.S. Marines in November killed 24 innocent Iraqi civilians without being provoked, senior Pentagon sources said Friday. Charges, including murder, could soon be filed against Marines allegedly involved, the sources said. The killings reportedly occurred while troops from the 3rd Battalion, 1st Marines, were searching for insurgents who planted a roadside bomb that killed a member of the unit. The Marines originally had reported that 15 civilians were killed by a roadside bomb in Haditha, a city along the Euphrates River in western Iraq. The Marines later suggested the civilians may have been caught in a firefight. However, photographs being reviewed by investigators are inconsistent with how the Marines claim the Iraqis died, according to a military source familiar with the investigation. Italy will pull 1,100 of its troops from Iraq in June, the new government said Friday, giving its first specific numbers about the planned withdrawal. Foreign Minister Massimo D'Alema said, quote, "In June we will reduce our troops from 2,700 to 1,600, end quote. His announcement came hours after he met with Premier Romano Prodi to map Italy's exit strategy from the U.S.-led coalition. You're listening to News on the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
While it's not on the front page, the genocide in Darfur, Western Sudan, continues. Rapes and other physical attacks still occur regularly, and large-scale food shortages may be just around the corner. But there is something you can do to make sure the U.S. government takes action to end this nightmare. Over 1,000 people have made the pledge to call or email the White House every weekday until President Bush ensures the deployment of 44,000 peacekeeping troops in Darfur. Give a voice to your conscience. Visit DarfurPledge.org.
Iran's ambassador to the United Nations said Tehran wants to work directly with the United States on an easily attainable resolution if Washington drops, quote, the intimidation tactics, end quote. Ambassador Mohammad Javad Zarif's statement came the day after the International Atomic Energy Agency pleaded with Iran to continue talks with European nations that want to offer it incentives in exchange for ending its nuclear enrichment program. A federal judge on Friday ordered Time magazine to turn over documents for a White House aide to use in his defense of perjury and other charges in the CIA leak case. The order by U.S. District Judge Reggie B. Walton also said the New York Times might have to turn over some information, but reduced the scope of documents the newspaper and other news organizations would have to provide to lawyers for the defendant, former top vice presidential aide I. Lewis Scooter Libby. Citing a lack of relevancy, Walton said that Judith Miller, a former Times reporter, doesn't have to provide two notebooks, her phone records, or appointment calendars to lawyers for Libby, Vice President Dick Cheney's former chief of staff. Walton also said NBC News does not have to provide Libby's defense team with one page of undated notes taken by correspondent Andrea Mitchell because she is unlikely to testify at Libby's perjury trial, which is set for January. A man charged with murder in Massachusetts was so angry with his lawyer's performance, he attacked the attorney in court, trying to strangle him as a shocked judge looked on, Boston Radio reported on Wednesday. Attorney Bruce Carroll told WBZ Radio, quote, "I think he just didn't like the way some of the rulings the judge was making was going yesterday morning," end quote. Carroll was speaking of the Tuesday morning attack by defendant John Gomes in Boston's Suffolk Superior Court. Said Carroll, "He eventually stood up, started saying something, and reached over and grabbed me by the throat." Several officers intervened before the 6-foot, 250-pound Gomes was separated from Carroll, the radio reported. Carroll had tried to withdraw from the case last week, but the judge denied his request. And that's the news from the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bruce Birch.
There's no such thing as a political prisoner. All prisoners are political prisoners. All trials in America are political trials. And when you go into jail, you see that. Because you see that 90% of the people in jail are black. That's what you see. You see that 90% of the people are young.
Show that takes a look at the week's events from every angle, even from down under. Welcome to Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch. Fourth Estate Radio is brought to you by the West Virginia Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream. Get in on the conversation by calling 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Your voice is useless until you use it. And now, your trans-global hosts, John Fox and Bruce Birch.
All right, everybody, welcome to Fourth Estate Radio. That's right, John Fox in, here in Sydney, Australia, and Bruce Birch on the other side of the planet up there in Greensboro, North Carolina. How you going, Bruce?
G'day, mate. How are you today?
Ah, not bad, man, not bad. A very, very kind of disjointed and crazy week. I'm kind of glad to get to this point because this is the first bit of normalcy all week is getting to this show. Weird stuff going on. That's all I can say is just weird things going on in the world. And I don't know, man. How are you?
Tell us how you really feel, John. What a way to get the ladies and gentlemen. It's like this, John. It's like that. That was actually from the copyright Looney Tunes Inc. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us on Fourth Estate Radio. If you are on the stream and you want to get involved and have a bit of a chat while you're having a bit of a listen, please do dial into or type into or however you choose to get there to fourthestateradio.com. Click on live chat, and that'll shoot you right into the chat room where you may have to register if you've never been there before.
Bruce?
Yes?
You sent them to our show site, not the network site.
Fourth Estate Radio? .com.
Yeah.
I mean, headonradionetwork.com. John, why don't you do the announcement? I'm never good at the announcements.
It's all good. I actually had to play that back in my head going, did I hear that right? Anyway, we're chatting at headonradionetwork.com. Click on the chat link, dive in the chat, call into the program. We've got lots going on tonight, plenty of just nonsense to get into, and you call into the program at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. Email either Bruce at BruceBirch.com or John, J-O-N, at FourthEstateRadio.com. We love to get your emails. And I've actually got some a couple stories from listeners' emails and whatnot to get into later. We've got all kinds of stuff to talk about. starting to be showing maybe some signs in of a split in the Republicans and some really weird stuff about some underlings of Gonzalez over this whole documents FBI Congress blah 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 fight, which I found kind of interesting. But there's that's just the tip of the iceberg.
The iceberg. Yes, and one, when you say that word, one, you know, an image comes to mind, and it's a ship. And the ship has a name on the side called the Titanic. So, I don't know. You know, let's do word association for a minute, John, shall we?
Sure, please.
Okay.
Sure.
AK-47.
Far flag.
Okay, you ready? AK-47.
Insurgent, sorry.
Okay, George Bush.
Idiot.
Okay, Dick Cheney.
Big A-H. Big A-H, that's all I can say.
Big A-H?
Big, well, I can't say the actual word. In German, Arschloch. How's your German? Arschloch.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, we're certainly going to be censored in Germany now. Okay.
No, we won't. They don't care.
Okay, one more, John. Ready? All right. Word association. Okay. You ready?
Okay.
Memorial Day.
Honor.
Okay.
And that's what... yeah, okay.
Radio.
You're trying to segue, aren't you? See, Bruce is trying to be subtle here. And if you don't know yet, while all other radio networks decide to take Memorial Day off, we are going to do honor to those that have fought in the past and give live content on Monday from, I believe, starting 3 in the afternoon Eastern time, Bruce?
Indeed.
Is that how things kick off?
3 p.m. until 1 a.m. That's right. 3 p.m. until 1 a.m. We're going to have the schedule is as follows. Guy James with the Guy James Show coming out of Florida will be on from 3 to 5. I will have a 2-hour spot from 5 until 7. Our good friend and fellow compatriot Bob Barnacle B. Rust Bucket Kincaid will be on from 7 until 10. That's really his name, folks. Trust me. And then our good pal who is on the opposite side of the planet talking and laughing as I'm speaking, John Fox, will be on from 10 p.m. until 1 a.m. On Monday. And you know what we're going to do? We're going to honor those who have given all to preserve the rights that we have by offering up a live edition of an all-day, or an all-afternoon and all-evening Head On Radio Network extraordinary extravaganza, and you know, just so that you can express yourself and your First Amendment right to free speech. So do tune in and you know, be a part of that, because you know, again, this is about trying to preserve the rights that we have. So take it away, John.
Well, you know, it's not only that, but it's also kind of a bit of a taste of things to come on this growing network. And we got a plug yesterday, I understand, for our live event that I can't even put a price tag on. But and must say big kudos to BartCop.com, because they have plugged our event on Monday, and we're seeing a lot of curious Bart Coppers come swinging by the horn, which has been a really, really good thing. And I'm looking forward to this, man.
Bart Coppers?
Bart Coppers. Works for me.
Bart Coppers.
Bart.
Okay, people from, yes, this would be surfers from the Bart Cop website, and you can check that out by going where, John?
I do believe that's just BartCop.com. Going down a few posts, they plugged the whole lineup. I'm not exactly sure who's responsible for getting that out there, but whoever it was, I appreciate it, and we all appreciate it. And it's gonna go ahead.
I was gonna say also WD40.com has also posted our schedule. So thank you WD40 so much for doing that, and also BartCop.com. And let's see, I think there's also Mike Malloy mentioned stuff on happening Monday on his radio show on Air America Radio. And I'm thinking that there's also a post that's been thrown up on Democratic Underground as well with the show post schedule. If you're listening to this program and you feel like you want to let people know, by all means, send an email. Let your buddies know, friends, compatriots, comrades in the struggle, if you will. Tell them to tune in. We could, we're doing it for you. So, if you want to let them know, please do. We'll be around.
Yep, it's going to be a conversation radio event. It's going to be. I'm looking forward to doing 3 hours following Bob. Having that kind of a warm up and then getting the late night weekday crowd. I'm really kind of. Very, very curious to see what Monday is going to be like, especially after you all have taken up the whole guts of the day.
Are you going to say the good part of the day?
No, man. I'm not saying that at all. I'm not saying that at all because if you remember the filibuster event a couple months back. Bob Kincaid got put in middle of the night, and he ended up having the best bloody phone callers of the entire weekend. It was awesome.
Okay, it looks like we're heading up on a break here, John, so let's go ahead and do that. If you listen to Fourth Estate Radio on the Head On Radio Network, if you'd like to get in on the program, we're going to get on to some stories here very shortly, so we won't just blather on. But we will get into some stories, and if you want to get in, you have your chance also. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so do call us at 1-877-443-2366. That's 1-877, the number 4, Head On, if you want to get on the Head On Radio Network. And John and I, well, we'll be right back.
Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to.
A group of U.S. businessmen in the UAE said they will invite the Oprah Winfrey Show and other talk shows to the Gulf to change American public opinion, which has helped block Dubai's takeover of 6 U.S. ports. He's saying that they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States and explain why the UAE is important. If you want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, they need to send... something, not Oprah. I mean, how many average guys do you know watch Oprah? I don't. If they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, as much as I hate to say it, they need to send Jerry Springer and the Jerry Springer Show over there with the bald guy. Maybe they can do a UAE version of my grandmother is also my lover or something like that. Oh, that's just a...
Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
Guy James Means, straight talk, and great guests like author and reporter Greg Palast.
Do we have Greg on the phone?
Yes, we do.
All right, very good, Greg.
Greg talked about his new book, Armed Madhouse.
You'll see in the second chapter of the book about Big Oil that I was able to get the inside documents from inside the State Department for the plans for the oil fields of Iraq, which is, you know, what it, you know, it's about the oil. And you actually, you know, if you thought they had a secret plan, I go and get it.
Greg Palast, thank you so much.
Don't miss Guy James weekday afternoons, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, right here on the Head On Radio Network. When Bruce and I filled in for Bob Kincaid, we didn't know what to expect, but we sure didn't expect a call from the decider.
Told Walmart to sell the Easter egg dye kits, you know, the ones with the resurrection egg. We decided at Camp David that we were going to support Walmart and go with what the Lord told them and buy some of them resurrection egg kits. And, you know, I found the resurrection egg. God spoke to me through that egg. And God told me that I am the fourth member of the Holy Trinity. We're calling it the Holy Quadraphonic. And so now I'm the fourth voice of the Holy Trinity. So now I've got four voices in my head. I have the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost and the decider. I'm the decider. I get to decide.
Don't miss Head On with Bob Kincaid weekdays 7 to 10 p.m. and Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch Saturdays 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
All right, you're back on Fourth Estate Radio. This is Bruce Birch, and that's John Fox, and that was some rocking music there. Mr. John Fox from down there in Sydney, Australia. Mr. Fox,
hello.
How are you?
Hey. I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good.
Let's talk about some news. You want to do that?
Yeah. Let's do that.
I just wanted to bring this to your attention, John. Guess who spoke today at a commencement address at the United States Military Academy?
Who? I can't even venture a guess.
That's right. President Bunny Pants.
Oh, right. Tortured brain.
And he compared himself to a Democrat. That's right. The man who hates Democrats compared himself to Harry S. Truman today in a commencement address at the United States Military Academy, saying Truman acted boldly against the fanatic faith of Cold War communism. I'm sorry, but communism wasn't a faith. Duh. Fanatic faith of Cold War communism in the same way that Mr. Bush's administration has responded to the threat of terrorism since the attacks of September 11, 2001. Mr. Bush told the class, and I quote, "By the actions he took, the institutions he built, the alliances he forged, and the doctrines he set down, President Truman laid the foundations for America's victory in the Cold War." I think that's the nicest thing he's ever said about a Democrat in his entire presidency. Would you agree with that, John? Or?
Well, yeah, but he's a nut job. I'm sorry. That's just... Hey, you know, what is this? I was going to talk a little bit later about the fact that it looks like there may be some splits within the conservatives regarding Bush, you know. So maybe he's figured out that he's not actually a Republican. So by default of there only being two choices, Coke or Pepsi in America, he must be a Democrat. Well, he's just dangerous. He's just grasping at any kind of straw as possible to try and make himself look or sound good, but I just don't see how it's even possible for him.
I think it's here's my issue, and I'll say it out there.
Yeah.
You know, we're getting close to Memorial Day. Memorial Day is the day that we honor those who've given their lives in service to the United States, to these United States, and. You know, I struggle with him as a commander in chief for a couple of reasons. And, you know, I have a very good friend here in Greensboro, and I will nickname him, let's see, what's a good name? We'll call him Bob, okay? Good friend of mine named Bob says, you know, he's struggling with this too. Now this guy's he is a lifelong Republican and very conservative fellow, but he's got a good spirit. And he and I talk about politics a lot, and we've talked about Bush, and he has said absolutely, unequivocally, that George Bush is the worst president we've ever had. You know. You're talking about the split in the conservative party, and I wanted to sort of I brought this up because Bush at this point he's grasping at straws, and for him to compare himself to Harry Truman to me is just like completely. I mean, you know, he will go back into history, and he'll find somebody that's like somehow anywhere close to him. Now Truman had great resolve as well. Yeah, but this president doesn't have great resolve. He likes to present himself as having great resolve. What he has is an inability to admit his mistakes. That's not great resolve.
Yeah, even that, you know, tail between the legs session that he and Blair had a couple of days ago, doesn't qualify as accepting his mistakes either. But I find it interesting, though. I just remembering back in my own memory, I don't remember presidents when they are doing things well having to compare themselves to past presidents. Follow what I mean?
Yes.
You didn't catch Clinton actually comparing himself to Kennedy, did you? Other people tried to.
No. No. Clinton liked to talk about Thomas Jefferson, if I remember correctly. But he didn't compare himself to Jefferson that I remember. I remember him talking about the principles that Jefferson espoused and laid down. This is not the first president he's compared himself to. I think there was another one. What was his name? Ronald Reagan, perhaps?
Ronald Reagan. Yeah, you're talking about Bush comparing himself to Reagan. Is that what you're saying, or was Reagan comparing himself to someone else in history?
No. This is getting confusing. Okay, no. Bush has compared himself to Ronald Reagan.
That's what I thought, and this is what I mean. He's not able to ride on his own accomplishments at all, so he has to try and compare himself to someone else who succeeded, even if it's doesn't apply to his situation at all. You know, I just think it's insane. But anyway, we're coming up on a break on the bottom of the first hour break here, Bruce. So I think we'll take that, and we might come back.
I believe we have
Say
a guest
again?
That'll be coming. We're going to be we will have a guest when we come back from our break, and we'll tell you all
right.
about that as soon as we get back. But go ahead, John.
Right on. Well, cool. We have a guest when we come back. Bruce will tell us all about it. You're listening to Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch. We'll see you on the other side of the break.
Hey, John, I just heard you got a new computer. Congratulations.
Thanks. It's the coolest thing.
What'll you do with your old computer?
I don't know. I guess I'll just throw it away.
Well, my company just bought new computers, and we decided to donate the old PCs to a place that gives them to local schools. You could do something like that.
Seriously, who would want a 3-year-old computer?
Hey, it might be great for someone else. Computers can be refurbished and reused instead of ending up in the trash. By passing it on, you can help the community and the environment.
If you're replacing your company's IT equipment or you're finished using your personal computer, pass it on to a local organization that accepts computers. To learn more, log on to epa.gov/passiton. This message was brought to you by EPA, Dell, Intel, HP, NEC, Philips, and this radio station on behalf of EPA's Plug Into eCycling Partnership. EPA does not endorse any commercial services or products of these groups. groups. For information on all partners, log on to epa.gov/plugin.
Hello, may I help you?
Hello, can I ask a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Oh, it's gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
It's not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Hello?
Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing, it's not an option, it's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path? One that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way? Or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580. Or go to peacecorps.gov.
Welcome back to Fourth Estate Radio. I think that was supposed to be Bruce's last bumper, but that's okay. I love Frank Zappa, too. Bruce Birch, we have a guest. I think I... anyway, sorry, inside production joke. Anyway, mate, we have a guest, and I believe you should just kind of take and handle this, because this is a gentleman that you've spoken to before, and it's all you.
Well, thank you, John. Yeah, we do have a guest on the line. On the line with us is Andy Kuhn, and Andy is the producer and filmmaker of a movie entitled Greensboro's Child. And if you're listening and you want to go check out the website that this movie is at, you can go to Greensboro, that's G-R-E-E-N-S-B-O-R-O, greensboroschild.com. And that'll take you right to the website where this film is located. Now, the film itself is about the entire situation surrounding Kwame Cannon. And Kwame Cannon is the son of a lady who was involved in the November 3rd, 1979 Greensboro massacre. And let me just I'll read you a little bit of a small thing here from the website. Wilena Cannon, a lifelong civil rights activist and member of the Workers' Viewpoint Organization, helped arrange a Death to the Klan rally and conference. As she and her 10-year-old son, Kwame, began to participate, the worst possible scenario became a reality. With police suspiciously absent, a caravan of cars filled with Klan, that's KKK Klan, and Nazi members rolled through the rally, engaged in a fight with the protesters, and opened fire with shotguns, rifles, and pistols, killing 5 people and wounding 10. Live footage from the local news cameras caught the massacre in its brutal form, yet each of the accused, each one, and I think there were 12, were eventually found innocent of all charges. In this award-winning documentary, Andy Kuhn explores the buried evidence from both state and federal court prosecutions. By examining the trials under a new lens, he vividly exposes civil trial records through documentation interviews, which proved the existence of local police, FBI, and ATF informants surrounding the rally. Andy Kuhn, welcome to Fourth Estate Radio. Glad to have you with us.
Hey, thanks for inviting me, Bruce. I appreciate it. Oh, yeah, and I'm having some technical problems on this side.
Okay, well...
go ahead. It's all good.
Okay. Well, the first, like I said, welcome to Fourth Estate Radio. The first thing, I myself, just throw a little comment your way. You know, I met Andy a couple days ago, Thursday. I went to see the screening. This is the same day that the Greensboro Truth and Reconciliation Commission announced revealed their final report on the incident that happened on November 3rd, 1979. There was a state trial. All the people who were involved were found innocent. There was a federal trial. All the people who were involved were found innocent. And then there was a civil trial in which the Greensboro Police Department and the KKK and Nazi Party were found to be jointly liable for the events of that day. Is everything worked out over there now?
Hey, everything is good. Thanks.
Okay. The first question I wanted to ask you is, now I know, when I saw the movie that, I noticed you were kind of a young guy. What kind of got you involved in this? Because I noticed you said, that you were, what, 7 or 8 years old when this happened?
I was five. I was actually five.
You were five.
So I didn't even realize this occurred until one of my roommates in college, who lives in Greensboro, grew up in Greensboro, told me about it. And when he told me about it, it shocked me because I was not aware of this. And me being a Jersey boy coming from New Jersey to North Carolina, it almost right away, it was almost like a stereotype. It's just like, oh, I should have known. But, obviously I don't feel that way. But first initial reaction was, oh, my God, I can't believe this. So it really took me by surprise, and I just wanted to investigate because that really is that's what I'm totally against as far as human nature. I'm just anti-Klan big time. So when I heard about that, I just wanted to know more about it. And luckily, it was a class project, so I got to explore it and use it as a class project in the meantime.
So you actually did this as a class project. How were you able to get some of the people who were involved in that day? I noticed that there were a number of the former mayor. You were able to get him on camera, Nelson Johnson, and some of the other folks who were involved in the events of that day. How were you able to get to these folks?
Well, it's interesting because the Communist Workers Party or the Workers Viewpoint Organization side was very easy to get to, and they were very open to talk about the incidents. The other side was kind of difficult to find, and while I was in school, I didn't find any of those proponents on that side. It was only till when I graduated and when I worked on a project outside with a History Channel, that's when I got the contacts from basically Art League and Jim Melvin, which was just enormous. So the original class project was pretty one-sided, and so when I came back and reopened it. That helped weigh the issue so much more, and it gave it so much more credibility to the documentary.
Now, in the movie, I don't want to give too much of it away because I want people to go and either rent it or buy it or whatever they can do. We'll give them information on how to do that toward the end of this interview. But the question I have for you is, or a statement, I guess, is that, Jim Melvin was the mayor at the time. And Jim Melvin really presented himself presented Greensboro as being completely not interested in this at all. Could you just sort of like for our listeners, can you give a sort of a background on what your view of how Greensboro has reacted, number one, to the Truth Commission, and number two, to the film that you've done?
Sure. It's really interesting because back in 79, when when you use the term communist back in 1979, it was wasn't a very good word for an organization to use as far as what they were trying to do as to help unionize textile industries and get people involved in the workplace and challenge the structure system of the corporate structure. But they used the Communist Workers' Party as it was just a bad choice of words, to be honest. And when people in Greensboro heard that the Communist Workers' Party challenged the KKK, it was just two extreme groups are getting together. Who cares? And especially when there are no cops involved, the KKK rolled into town and massacred, and they shot and killed five of the protesters on the Communist Workers' Party side. After that incident happened, the whole city was in chaos. Like, it was shut down. There are National Guardsmen. There was a curfew, and the people in Greensboro were really scared. They didn't know what was going on, and they attributed most of that to the Communist Workers' Party. Being back in, like I said, in the 80s, that was a very bad time to be labeled a communist. So the city just thought it was two extreme groups getting together and wiping each other out. And the worst part about it was, in the state and federal trials, that's pretty much what the prosecutors were going against. They didn't keep in mind that the five people that were shot and killed, they kind of painted it as the Klan came in, the Communist Works Party challenged them, they had some guns, they shot at them, the Klan defended themselves, and they happened to kill five of the other the protesters. So the people in the city really didn't pay that close attention, or I wouldn't say pay close attention. They listened to what the newspapers had to say, the media, and the media painted a really poor picture of who this group really was. I mean, the people that were...
Well,
sure, go ahead.
Andy, if I can sneak in, John here in Sydney. First of all, from a fellow Jersey boy, I can't avoid asking the question, what exit? But I think what the demonizing of the word communist was easily played out in this situation, so it, you know, people just didn't listen to what actually happened just because they were able to associate these people with quote unquote communists.
Right.
Is what I'm seeing, and so yeah, I can see how it would have been portrayed as just being, you know, two radical groups got together. But that actually wasn't the case. You had a peaceful protest in which then the Klan rocked up and started the violence. But by just portraying it in that way, and this is something that Bruce and I talk about often, which is the way things are, the semantics of reporting.
Right.
And this is a really, really great example of that, where the semantics of the reporting, if they had actually reported it as innocent, peaceful people protesting an evil group like the Klan,
yeah,
was then attacked by the Klan, be a completely different situation right from the get-go, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely. And,
well,
and the Klan kind of...
I guess...
Go ahead, Bruce. Mm-hmm,
go ahead, Andy. No, go ahead, Andy.
Okay, I was just going to say that it almost seemed like the Klan was almost like the anti-hero here. They're like, they weren't rooted for.
Right.
They came in and they did their job. I mean, they did what the Klan normally does. And, you know, you challenge them, you got what you asked for. And that's the mentality, what the people of the city really thought about the whole thing, which was detrimental to the court cases.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that I wanted, you know, see, I'm the only Southern born and bred guy here on the radio right now. Anyway, and, you know, just based on my own personal observations over the last 30-some-odd years, what I've seen is that the Klan, while it is vilified in black circles and in white circles as well and in mixed circles, it's still seen as sort of more of an established entity than anything that has to do with leftist politics, especially in the South.
Mm-hmm.
So people look at the Klan, and they you know, white people that I've known in the past will look at the Klan with sort of dismay, you know, that they exist and that they're around and that kind of thing, which they still are around, folks, and don't ever think that, you know, and it wouldn't take much to see that kind of movement rear its ugly head again.
Absolutely. And they don't wear their hoods anymore either.
No, they don't. They really don't.
That's a really good point. That's a really good point.
They're called
well,
Minutemen.
And Bruce, you're saying, you coming from, you know, a Southern-born perspective, I reckon Andy had a similar experience when he moved to Greensboro that I did when I moved to San Antonio, Texas, after, you know, 21 years of growing up in the New York tri-state area. You know, I never doubted that, you know, racism in the KKK and all of that short-sightedness existed. But until you go from what normally is a much more kind of tolerant left place, that first initial point, at least I found it in Texas, if you weren't a Mexican or a Texan, you weren't nothing.
Well, Texas is right. Its own, I mean, that's its own state, I mean, country. People love Texas. If you're from Texas, yeah. You can't
Andy,
talk junk about Texas.
Yeah, you can't talk. Yeah, okay. Before we get off into Texas, though, I want to reel things back to Greensboro. I did want to, like, you know, one of the things that I noticed when we were sitting there in the screening, the first screening of the movie in Greensboro there that Thursday night, that one of the comments you told me was that you felt that the findings of the Greensboro Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which can be found at greensborotrc.org, that the findings actually mirrored pretty much what you felt and what you documented in your screen in your documentary. Could you comment on that?
Sure. Well, I just came back from the Truth Commission and their revealings. Of course, it was a quick summary of what they believed, and they basically felt that the Klan came to the rally with intentions to provoke them and to ultimately have a violent confrontation. And they also thought that the city of Greensboro did a poor job of protecting them, that they're implicit in what happened, that they knew that was going to happen. They had so much intelligence on the matter, and they did nothing to stop it. And obviously, my documentary portrays that. And the Communist Workers' Party also were to blame, too, because of their choice of words. And to attack the Klan, you know, it was just more of like it should have been a little bit more subtle, not as direct. But I studied most of the material. I went through all the evidence down in Chapel Hill, and there was so much evidence that when you go through it, you literally feel sick. Like you just can't believe how much there is of all the documented intelligence that they had. And the receipts for the, you know, the police informants, the FBI, the ATF, and knowing all this information. And then you look at how many shots these people took, or the protesters took. It was just sickening. Like, the people that got shot, it wasn't just a bullet in the back of the head. I mean, they got hit like 30 times by, of course, pellets, but from shotguns. But still, if there was like an arm, the hand, the foot. It was just overwhelming. I mean, and if you and I can understand and respect the Truth Commission for going through all this information. Not only that, but also getting to talk to the people who did not want it to be public. They had the private hearings, and to really understand what truly happened on that day, it was just I can't imagine going through all that. I mean, I would be extremely upset if I went through all that. But they came out and they did such a remarkable job of, you know, holding a community-based group that really put out its findings and solidified what they had to say.
Let me ask you this, Andy. Andy Kuhn from GreensboroChild.com. I did want to, you know, in the movie, I noticed that there was one thing that was, or one entity that was conspicuously absent from the scene that morning, which obviously was the police. There were no police around. Could you speak to that? Where were they? Why weren't they there on the scene? And how long did it take them to actually get there once the shots rang out?
Well, this is an interesting thing. The police were told to go to lunch during the beginning of the parade, which began at 11 o'clock. And luckily, I had an interview with one of the police officers who was a detective at the time. And I guess I was really young when I did this documentary, and he threatened to walk off. It wasn't like a big deal, but he felt my questioning kind of a bit provoking. So he was just like, I know where you're trying to get at. You know, I'm not going to answer any of those questions. So I kind of timidly went back to I thought he was so valuable just for him to recite the day when he was there. But even as what he said on tape, just it didn't match up to what the city official said or the police report said during that day. He said that he went to go get a biscuit with his partner, and then when he heard that the Klan was coming in to where the parade was, he and his partner went to go where the parade was. Now, how did he and his partner know where that parade was and no other cops were there? And they, you know, and so then they see, he said he wanted to go to see what the Klan looked like in their hoods. That's just ridiculous. I mean, so he went down there, and next thing you know, they get out and they start wrestling with each other. 88 seconds later, five people are dead. And him and his partner were the only ones on the scene at the time. Well, that's not true, because a Greensboro detective, Jerry Cooper, was in a car following the Klans and taking pictures of them while they're doing this, while they're getting off the interstate, while they're pulling up in their caravans, and when they got out of the cars and began shooting. So it blows your mind when you hear how the police acted on that day. The funny thing was, they had police officers at the end of the march because it was supposed to begin at Carver and Everett and end at the Wesley Community Center. So they had the end part right, but they never got there. So it's just mind blowing.
Well, let me ask you this. So all right, or let me just confirm this. What I'm hearing you say is that the policemen were on the scene or close by and were watching the Klan, but did absolutely nothing to stop them, even though they had good intelligence that they were coming there to kill people.
Well, I think the intelligence was just kept at a high ranking. I don't think the foot patrol knew about that. When they were just watching, you know, them drive through, and they thought there was just going to be a confrontation. I guess, you know, they just wanted to, as a police officer, you just want to see a confrontation. That doesn't make any sense. So, it didn't trickle down. It's sad. It's just a sad fact.
Now,
well,
there was
Andy, do you think that it didn't? Sorry.
Go ahead.
What I was going to say, John, was I was going to ask him this. Was there not also a couple of paid informants, or there was actually also a federal agent on the scene?
I'm not sure if he was actually there. Bernard Bukovich he worked for the tobacco firearms or tobacco, alcohol, and firearms, and he was actually infiltrating the Nazis at the time. So he was reporting back to them. Eddie Dawson, who was an FBI and a police informant, he was there, and I mean he was in the lead vehicle that shot up in the air. And I forget where I read this, but him and not familiar with a guy who shot in the air, but the people in that truck, the pickup truck where Eddie Dawson was in, after they shot in the air and got everything and they all took off, he went around the bar. He went around the corner to a bar that they hang out in. He told them to turn on TV. They're about to see some crazy stuff on TV. And it's nuts. It's just bizarre. And it's funny because when Art League said, you know, when the Klan got out of the car, when he pulled them over, they were all shocked. Yeah, they thought they were going to get away. I mean, that's probably why they were so shocked. It's a hard scene.
Now, they were arrested and charged with murder, or?
Yeah, with murder.
Okay. And they were held under, I think, if I remember correctly, a $50,000 bond. One of the organizers of the original rally, Nelson Johnson, was also arrested that day. Tell me about his bond.
His bond was for $100,000, and he was arrested because after his fellow protesters were shot and killed and the Klan was arrested, the police were finally there. He was really angry, and he spoke up, and when he spoke up, they arrested him because he was pretty much saying some things that they thought were inciting to riot. And as he said, when you try to incite to riot and death occurs, then they can use that or he could be blamed for the deaths itself. But since the deaths were already happened, I don't think they could have pressed charges on him for that. So he was arrested for opening his mouth and speaking very, very vocally.
Having just lost five of his friends, I mean, I can imagine anyone would be in shock, but I remember watching the footage and thinking this man was completely furious, and with damn good reason of being. Andy, what's, you know, just final thoughts? What you know, coming on the back end of this, you've seen the report, you've seen the commission, you've done a couple of screenings, several screenings of your movie out in the public. What you know, tie this up in a little bit of a basket, if you will, just sort of your final thoughts on your work and what's happened recently.
Well, the one thing that my work really hasn't been able to get exposure, so I appreciate this inviting me on here.
No problem.
And the Truth Commission also has helped to kind of let people try to understand what happened at that day. And for what I see, the event of that day, it's very scary, because when a group that is trying to help people, help poor people especially, to understand the ramifications that they're going to have on the economy, on the social structure, and when you have a hate group like the Klan come in and do the dirty work for the state, the government, whoever it is, it's scary, and it's magnified too, because it can happen anywhere and for any other or situations, to that matter. So I just wish people would open their hearts and just watch this. And I've had great response so far from the people of Greensboro. I've learned so much more. You know, one of the commissioners came to the last night's screening, and she spoke, and I learned a lot of new things, because, as like I said before, they went through so much evidence and testimony from other people. So hopefully that this can help communities understand, and hopefully don't fall into the same foothold that happened in 79. And even, you know, protesters learn from what the Communist Workers Party did wrong and try not to go down the same route. But I'm just ecstatic when people talk about it and want to learn what happened on that day, and to see what they can do in the future to make sure that something like that does not occur again. And, John, I want to tell you, it's exit 151.
Well, you're
right on, right on. I was...
Andy... But before we go, Andy, exit 151, right on. Now, off the Jersey Turnpike, I take it.
Parkway.
But
Parkway.
How can people buy the movie?
Just come to our site, greensboroschild.com. We continue the conversation about, you know, events that occurred today, and also Greensboro's Child. Like, if you watch the movie, you have questions, we have a whole review conversation segment where you can come in and talk about it if you want. And my brother has helped me big time to open up this website and get exposure, and also to have an open community where we could talk about it. So they can go on there and do that. And also you can purchase the DVD if you like. It's $15 and $2.50 shipping. So thank you so much, Bruce and John. I appreciate you inviting me.
No
worries. Sounds like a deal to me. And we're gonna link to Greensboro's Child and put that Google video that you've got up recently up or it's YouTube, whatever it is, up on the FourthEstateRadio.com site and at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, so people can find you nice and easy.
Sweet. I appreciate that, guys.
Okay.
Andy Best of Coon, luck to you, man. Thanks for being on.
Thank you.
Andy Coon of GreensborosChild.com, thank you so much for joining us on Fourth Estate Radio, and I will be in touch with you real soon. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, good luck, guys, especially you, Bruce, with the Greensboro Police.
Well, we'll talk a little bit later on in the show.
Okay, take care.
All right, Andy. Okay. That's Andy Coon of GreensborosChild.com. You can check that movie out there. You are listening to Fourth Estate Radio. We're at the very top of the hour. We're going to go do some news, and then we'll be right back. Give us a call, 1-877-443-2366. We'll be right back.
Got my pride hanging out of my bed. You mess with my life, so I bought my lid. Even mess with my children, and just screaming at my wife. Get off of my back if you wanna get out of here alive. Freedom, that's what I want.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
And I'm Jesse Russell.
AFL-CIO President John Sweeney joined hundreds of New Jersey nurses for a rally at Liberty State Park in Jersey City Wednesday night. Thousands of nurses have authorized a strike if necessary in contract talks with nine New Jersey hospitals. The nurses are concerned about working conditions, staffing ratios, and the union rights of charge nurses. Sweeney says the National Labor Relations Board is also about to decide three cases known collectively as the Kentucky River decisions. Employers have been pushing for a broad definition of supervisory employees, including charge nurses, that would take away union representation rights for workers who are newly defined as supervisory. Sweeney is kicking off a national campaign to educate the public about these coming decisions. He says hundreds of thousands of workers, and not just nurses, are at risk of losing their union rights if the NLRB takes the employer's side in these decisions.
An increasing number of assaults on bus drivers in Toronto has the union asking members to stop requesting fares from passengers. The Amalgamated Transit Union represents more than 8,000 employees for the Toronto Transit Commission. The current fare cost for passengers is $2.75 Canadian, roughly $2.45 in U.S. dollars. Bob Kinnear, president of the ATU Local 113, said the transportation commissioners have done little to stop the increase of fares and as a result have pitted drivers versus passengers.
Putting the responsibility onto us and pitting the public against us when it's the inability of them to secure the proper funding so the public out there wouldn't have to pay the exorbitant amount of fares that they are paying currently.
Kinnear said that not only do victims of attacks suffer physically, they are also impacted financially.
It is outrageous that victims of crime and their families have to suffer financially because they were attacked for doing their job.
Studies have shown that nearly 70% of drivers have been the victims of assaults ranging from spitting to stabbing. Kinnear said between 1999 and 2003, assaults rose by 31%.
Bankruptcy hearings for Delphi are underway this week. The giant auto parts maker is trying to throw out its union contracts as it destroys more than 20,000 good U.S. jobs in favor of moving production to cheap overseas labor markets. Delphi wants to slash the wages of those workers who remain after these jobs are destroyed.
Here is today's economic report. Surprise! New home sales bucked the national housing sector slide in April. Sales are down 5.7% over last year, but April marked the second straight month in 2006 that the market saw growth. New home sales rose by 4.9% in April, but economists do remain cautious, suggesting that the increase is part of a larger, orderly decline across the entire market.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Second hour of Fourth Estate Radio. This is Conversation Radio, so ring Bruce and John on 1-877-4 head on. That's 1-877-443-2366. Your voice is useless until you use it. Here's John and Bruce.
All right, everybody, welcome back to hour two of Fourth Estate Radio. I am John Fox in Sydney, Australia. And Bruce Birch, I do believe, is up there in Greensboro, North Carolina, back with a fresh cup of tea. You there, Bruce?
Not quite
or
yet.
I'm getting there.
We're going to get there. I'm back here. What a wonderful guest Andy Kuhn was. An amazing, you know, if you want to get that movie, folks, I really, really highly recommend it. I saw the movie. It's about 75 minutes long. It's not incredibly long. But I saw the movie Thursday evening and then went back again last night for the 9 o'clock showing. And actually one of the Truth and Reconciliation Commissioners was in attendance, as well as Kwame Cannon, who was the young boy that I spoke of when I introduced the film. The movie actually is more about – well, it's about both things. It's about two stories. The story of Kwame Cannon, whose mother was involved in the incident of that day. Now, interestingly enough, Kwame Cannon, a year later, after the civil trial and you know, and the Greensboro Police Department was found held to be jointly liable. He was caught doing some cat burglaries. Kwame Cannon was, and when he went up for sentencing, or you know, his lawyer, you know, worked out a deal. They called it a deal, wherein he would receive 2 life sentences for 5 burglaries.
What?
And yes.
How did they just fuck that?
Well, it's in the state code of North Carolina that is. If it's a cat burglary, basically where you break into the house while people are there in the middle of the night and go steal stuff, that's a possibility of life in prison. And although no one ever gets given that sentence, Mr. Kwame Cannon did get that sentence. And he served 12 years, 9 months and 38 days, or 9 months and 23 days, I think, of that sentence before he was released from prison in 1999. And I had the liberty of speaking with him the other night, completely off the record. He is completely forbidden by the state to speak to the media about any of it. So,
I never understand how when these kind of things come up in history, where you know someone's you know gone away and done time for something, and even after they're a free man, they're not even allowed to speak their piece. I mean, what you know, they've already been found guilty of whatever, you know. Like it makes me very, very suspect. And then you tell me that this guy for cat burglary got 2 life sentences. That's just absolutely insane. That just sounds
insane.
You know.
And,
I mean,
and actually, the way
you'd have
the
to
way
think
that
you,
he was. The way that he went about getting the sentence too was really sketchy. The attorney, he didn't even have a court date, and they ushered him out of the jail. Sort of surprisingly, got him out of the jail, took him to the courthouse. His attorney said basically, you know, you can get 15 years. Now this is the only interview that anyone has ever gotten of him is actually in the movie, because after he was released, Governor Jim Hunt released him, or you know, to house arrest basically. And when he got out of prison, one of the conditions of his parole was that he is forbidden from talking to the media. Now he wasn't exonerated, okay? He's still under the supervision of the state of North Carolina. So in essence, he's living his sentence out on the outside, and he's also forbidden from living in the city of Greensboro. That's another condition of his parole.
It all just makes it distinct to high heaven, you know, more and more. But you know, it just sounds like the guy's been absolutely railroaded into silence. You know, I mean, was there an actual public trial? Was the trial like public? Was the evidence public?
It was public to the extent that he admitted that he'd done without lawyer present. I mean, you know, basically he was railroaded. I mean, let's just say it. He was railroaded, and what the sins of the mother were taken out the son was punished for the sins of the mother, basically. So
yeah,
and that's the second story that's involved in he is Greensboro's child.
It's amazing, and this is why we didn't get there when we had Andy on, but you know I was going to ask if there was any evidence. You know, he's saying that you know the intelligence stayed at upper levels and wasn't disseminated down. Now, was that by design? Were there, you know, family members or even members, you know, of the KKK who were high placed in the police force there, you know? Because, you know, it's kind of they were on site, but only at the end of the parade ground. And there's just all this stuff that just leads up to, you know, setting up a wash and an exoneration of the Klan.
Yeah, well...
You know what I mean? It stinks to high heaven.
I have it on very reliable information also that the same people that were involved in the original trials to acquit the Nazis and et cetera, some of those same folks were the same employees working within the court system at the time that Kwame Cannon's trial and situation hit the Guilford County Superior Court. So, you know, I mean,
a guy who's facing two life terms is not going to be fearful of much when it comes to things that may have occurred outside of those events. That there must have been people there that were afraid of this guy speaking about what happened, you know, on this horrific day in Greensboro's history.
What I find interesting is that mass murderers can write books from prison, but he can't talk to the media, and he's on the outside. I've never, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway. I know that, like I said, I can't. You know, it really is, John. It's completely. This entire story is one of those stories that I think probably, you know, maybe not to this extent, but every southern city has one of these stories that exists right under the polished, you know, facade where the dogwoods bloom in May and the flowers are all up and down Main Street. And, you know, there's always one of these horrific stories that you think about. You know, I think probably in every city that is out there. So I really, in the watching of this movie and in the involvement that I've gotten of this story as well, John, it's really made me rethink a lot of how I feel about our current law enforcement situation here in the city that I live. And that's unfortunate. And the city itself doesn't seem to have any interest in coming forward and saying, yeah, we screwed up. You know? So,
well, you know, Green, more and more, you know, there seems to be a bit of this, you know, kind of tying line in Greensboro's history where freedom of speech hasn't necessarily been a prime directive as far as your local leaders. I mean, yeah, you know, I mean, there was the gentleman that we interviewed who got expelled for the posters or whatever that was, and all that kind of nonsense. And, you know, I think there's so much damage done in not being honest with oneself about the stories that we tell ourselves about the place that we come from, you know? And I think it's denying the truth in those stories that we tell ourselves, to use a Hartmanism. You know, these things will continue to happen, and you'll continue to have people not be held accountable in order to save the long-term face. And that's really, really sad. But anyway, we're coming up on our quarter-hour break here. And when we come back, we're going to go straight to the phones. We've had people on hold. I do believe Union Man Wayne is waiting next in the queue. So we're going to take this break and then come back and speak to our good friend Wayne from West Virginia. You're listening to John Fox and Bruce Birch on Fourth Estate Radio. We're chatting at the Head On Radio Network chat room and blogging at fourthestateradio.com. We'll see you after the break.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he that... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, hi. How you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh?
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Planet Check. Planet Check.
Michael Franti from Spearhead talks about the new benefit CD for the nonprofit environmental law firm, Earth Justice.
I'm always involved in Earth Justice as an idea, no matter where I go.
Franti, along with artists Nora Jones, Los Lobos, Willie Nelson, and Bonnie Raitt, donated their music in support of life's absolute necessities, clean air and water.
Music today is not speaking to really what's happening on the streets. It's really important that artists come together, work on projects together, and put out unified voices about what's happening today in our planet.
In the United States alone, more than 70,000 people die per year from air pollution.
Keep on talking now, it's silent. Keep on singing about it.
Music makes a difference. Give it a spin at wherewelive.org. That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at cliffbar.com.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
Dave Radio. My name is Bruce Birch, and down under the table is John Fox. John, come out from under the table, man.
I ain't under the table, mate. It's not like we're at the pub or something, and I'm, you know, pissed off me. Tight.
John?
But anyway.
I think we're going to go over to
yes.
Some phone calls.
Bruce. let's do that. I do believe, if I'm not mistaken, we have our good friend Union Man Wayne, who decided to ring before we kept him up all night.
Hey, man, how you doing? I'm going to stay up
doing
all
okay?
night.
Good, mate. How are you?
Can you hear me? Uh-oh.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
No, we got you. We got you good. What can we do for you tonight,
sir? Man, I've been listening to the show. Wonderful show. I like that interview. And, you know, like Bruce touched on it. I mean, every little town has these ugly stories. And, you know, what that all comes down to is that's labor history. And labor history has been suppressed in this country far long, you know, before the Reagan Revolution. I mean, you know, labor history has been taken out of the history books. People don't know what happened. And that incident right there, you could call them communists, you could call them Bolsheviks, you could call them whatever the hell you want. Those were working people. That's what they were. And they were trying to stand up for their rights. And that's an honorable thing.
It is. And incidentally, too, Wayne, you know, they were trying to organize Cone Mills here in Greensboro, which is one of, which at that time was the largest textile plant in the world.
Who was them? Dirty commies?
Those dirty commies, exactly.
Huh? Yeah.
Yes.
Listen, man, yes, you know, you guys are just kids, man. I remember filling out job applications when I was 15 years old that there was a question on there. Let me see. Do you now or no? Yeah. Do you now or have you ever been a member of the Communist Party? John Birch Society. It went on and on and on. I mean, they kept adding paragraphs.
No relation to Bruce, by the way. I said no relation to Bruce, by the way.
No. No.
John Birch.
Oh, John Birch. Well, okay, I'm sorry. I never quite figured that one out, but, I mean, they must have been a bunch of dirty commies, too, I guess. I mean, were they for workers' rights?
John Birch?
Yeah.
John Birch Society was an ultra-right-wing cabal group. And they're still around.
They were for slavery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say so.
You know, I mean, you know, if you're against workers' rights, you know, I don't know what the hell else you would call it. You know, indentured servants, you know, if you want to use a polite name, but it all comes out to the same thing. So, but, well, anyway, I thought that was a very interesting interview. And talking about, you know, like how law enforcement and, you know, the terrible decisions you get and how they act. I mean, you have to remember, law enforcement is basically a product of the corporations from, you know, 100, 150 years ago. I mean, the West Virginia State Police were started by, I don't know what they were, Pinkertons or whatever, but they were coal company goons is what they were. And the state progressed and said, you know, we got to have a state police. Well, okay, make these guys the state police. I don't know. Am I talking in circles, or is anybody hearing me?
No. Totally hearing you. I'd never heard that the current police forces are basically, you know, the many generations down of what used to be the company thugs.
Well, but you know, they were all John. They were all company towns. You know, even yeah. I mean, I'm a Yankee, a Northerner. I was born 20 miles from Pittsburgh. You know, I just
right.
missed that line there or whatever. But, I mean, it was the same thing in the steel mills. The Jones and Lockland Steel Corporation owned the town. They owned the police. They owned the stores. You know, the same thing that you had in the coal mines. Anything you bought at the company store was automatically deducted from your check. The mill police, the company police, patrolled the town. You know, that's how most law enforcement organizations were started.
And as far as
I'm concerned, it carries on today.
It does. And actually, to dovetail on that, Wayne, at the screening that I went to last night of this movie, the one of the commissioners that attended is a lady who is in her 80s. And she still remembers the days of the House Un-American Activities Committee that was headed up by McCarthy.
McCarthy, yes.
And she said... This was an interesting comment. She said that across, at least across the Southeast, that a lot of the state bureau of investigations, you know, organizations that there are, agencies that there are across the Southeast, actually grew out of the that each state had their own Un-American Activities Committee investigations team, and that those teams eventually evolved into being state bureaus of investigation. Which I found to be actually, you know, absolutely enthralling. I mean, she was just like a walking history book, this lady, you know.
Oh, that's why I love old people, man. Of course, I'm
she's
old.
Great.
I love me.
You're only 35, Wayne. What are you talking about?
You're right. Well, you know, you guys listen to old people. They know a lot of stuff, man. They really
I do, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, man, and you know it's pretty sad the way that you know modern society ends up locking way too many of them away way too soon. We end up losing all that perspective, I think.
Oh yeah, we do. Yeah,
and
go ahead.
But you know, it's interesting. You talk about that. You know, we don't know anything about labor history, and you know, I kind of just chimed in during the interview with Andy that. you know, they were able to whitewash the story locally with the media just by using the demonized word of communist.
Oh, exactly.
To make neither side was valued.
Right. And they replaced that with liberal now. Don't you think?
They're really trying. They're trying very, very hard. I think at a time that they were more effective with it, I would say, in the late 80s. But, the right wing continues to use that kind of strategy of trying to demonize the liberal left and constantly attaching things like wacko and extremist always in on the use of left or liberal.
I agree.
But, when you look at the shift in tides with Bush's approval ratings and whatnot, I don't know whether or not that grabs quite as much traction as it used to with as much of the population. I mean, I reckon it still gets the average right-wing redneck trout hook, line, and sinker still, but that kind of wishy-washy middle that went with it because that's how the country went, I think are not grabbing on to that as easily as they used to.
Oh, I agree with you 100%, but that's just a recent event, you know. And those are the things that we have to do to change this all around. There's nothing wrong with supporting working people. There's nothing wrong with working people that are willing to, you know, the only thing that a working person has to sell or bargain with is his life, his time. And, you know, we all know that's a limited amount of time. For some, you know, it varies. Some people live to 100, some don't make it that long. But that's the only thing a working person has to bargain with. And it's not too much for that person to ask to be paid a living wage, to have health insurance for him and his children and wife, and to be able to retire with dignity. There's nothing wrong with it. The Democratic Party has done a very poor job of putting that issue out there. And you know,
well,
there's
where the
belief. Go ahead.
That's where that whole media campaign on has worked to a point. The Democrats are afraid to grab onto the unions because they're still thinking that there's that stigma of the corruption of the 70s or something. And I think it's time to just shed that away and not even pay attention to it anymore.
I've got people for the Democrats in West Virginia. Pardon me. I know I keep interrupting you. But, you know, union people and union members are going to start showing up at the Democratic executive committees, and working people are going to start demanding from the Democratic Party to be the party of the working people. And, you know, that has been challenged in that past, most recently in the last 4 or 5 years, and in many ways there's a lot of validity to that argument. And what we have to do is take the Democratic Party back. I don't have time for a third political party. You know, I'm not going to live long enough to make a third political party. I want to fix the one we got, and we can do that. You know, it's got a lot of things going for it. It's got pretty good name recognition, you know, a couple other little things, and we just have to get our message out there. And our message has to be the support of the working people. And that's why it's so
absolutely important, man,
to elect a Democratic Congress this time. Because if we take control of the House, then the Democrats can be held 100% responsible for everything that happens in that body. And if they don't perform, if they don't act like good Democrats and true Democrats, then we bounce their ass in 208. Now, I'm sorry.
Yay, I love it. Sounds like a plan to me.
I was on a real soapbox.
No. I love it because you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And I'm gonna wrap it here because we've run way over the bottom of the hour break, but that's okay. On Jim Lehrer, I think it was just yesterday, there was a very interesting exchange with the two commentary guys, Brooks and
Oh that
and what? And Shields.
Shields, yeah.
And where they both alluded to the fact that the American people are starting to not look at Democratic and or Republican corruption. They're starting to look at the fact that it's corruption straight through in the Capitol.
Don't matter what letter you have more after your name. That's exactly right.
Right. And we need to actually get control of, get our voice heard in government again. And the splits in the right wing are starting to show as well. So, Wayne, I got to wrap it up. We're way over, and I really appreciate you ringing in.
Because I got to tell you something before I leave.
Go, boy. Okay.
You know, you complimented Bruce on his, good day, mate. You know, Bruce, let me tell you something, man. He's you know, you got a lot of work to do on that, okay? The good day, mate. Are you listening to me, Bruce?
I'm listening. Listening.
Are you mad? I mean, you know, did I hurt your feelings? Listen, the first time I ever heard that expression, my cousin told me a story about going on R&R from Nam. And he said he went to Sydney, Australia, and he was sitting on a bench. He said, I wasn't there 25 minutes. And he said, and a guy came up to me and says, want to buy some acid, mate?
And everyone there.
I've heard that. Think of that story. He never told me whether he bought any or not, but, you know, that's another story. I'll let you guys go.
Yes.
Okay. Well, good
night. All right, Wayne. Thanks so much, man.
All right, brother. Bye.
All right, Agnes, go ahead and hit us with some out me way ran this break over. And Bruce Birch and I'll be back with possibly the Occupation Watch, possibly not. You're listening to Fourth Estate Radio. We'll be back with Jim if he's still holding on the line. And we'll see you in a minute.
I'm just a kid.
I'm six.
I'm nine.
I'm four and a half.
And I've got asthma.
You know just how upset I can get when I have an asthma attack.
And I know that you want to do all that you can do to help me.
But you might not know
about all the different stuff that can make me have an asthma attack.
Or all the simple things you can do to fight my asthma.
You can fight it with a bear.
You can fight it with a duck.
You can fight it with a wrench.
Put my teddy bear in the freezer to wipe out dust mites.
Dry off rubber duckies and fix leaks to get rid of mold.
Cause mold can start my asthma attacks too.
Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
For doing all you can to help me out.
Because I don't want to feel like a fish with no water.
Dog attacks and dog bites come in all sizes. Think your dog doesn't bite? Don't be so sure. Dog attacks are one of the nation's most commonly reported public health problems. Francia Smith, consumer advocate for the U.S. Postal Service.
With the summer heat and children out of school, the dog bite risk gets worse. But with a little care, dog owners can prevent most attacks and protect themselves, too, from the serious legal, financial, and emotional consequences that often result. Over half the dog bite victims are children. Any dog can bite for the first time, even with the owner there. So whether you are a dog owner or not, please take the time to learn about dog safety. Visit USPS.com and type the words dog bite into the search box for the links you need. You'll be glad you did.
This message is provided as a public service by this station and the U.S. Postal Service.
Across the night was the moon that stole my slumber. Across the night I fell in love with faithful sleep.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Fourth Estate Radio. John Fox in Sydney, Bruce Birch up there in Greensboro, North Carolina. Bruce, you there, mate?
Shh. Yes, I'm here.
What's... All right, mate, I think we should go straight to the phones coming back right now, because our buddy Jim has been hanging on the line for ages, and I'm so sorry for keeping you so long. Jim, welcome to Fourth Estate Radio.
Hello, I feel like Zarathustra. I've gone through the ages of band.
It wasn't that bad, was it?
That's okay. Don't worry about it. You know, I had 2 points to make, bullets, okay? First,
please do.
Reference to being like Harry Truman. And I was thinking about in 1988 when Lloyd Benson was studying Dan Quayle, and Quayle compared himself to John Kennedy, and Lloyd Benson said, I knew John Kennedy, and you're no John Kennedy.
That was a beautiful moment. I've seen a couple people make that reference recently. I don't think it was to this statement of Bush's, but I've seen that one pop up before. That was a beautiful bit of debate history.
Point number two. This is in dedication to my father, who passed away in 1998. But back in the 30s, when my dad was a young man, but he was in college, he and some of his friends were out one night roistering, okay? And apparently one of his buddies had found this black boy, and they thought it was a lark to put him adrift in the middle of a lake or a pond in a boat. Kid was about 7 years old, okay? And my dad didn't like it. And so he got the kid and took him home. And the next day he visited his mother, and his mother said, Mr. Anderson, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do. I have all these kids, and I can't raise this boy. Can you help me? My dad adopted that boy.
You kidding?
No. This is in South Carolina.
Pretty progressive for that time, that's for sure. My hat off to him. That's outstanding.
Well, this young man was aged.
Say again?
He saw to it that, you know, he lived with us, and saw to it that this young man was educated, went to school, had clothing, food, and later this young man became a postmaster and would attend all of our family reunion.
Became a postmaster as opposed to going postal. Amazing what I don't mean to be flippant about it, but really, seriously, that could be, you know, that could be the difference.
You talk about the Bedsheet Gate. They paid our house a number of visits. And, you know, later on, you know, my father was in public service. He was a Navy engineer and went on to become the mayor of my hometown for 30 years.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, sounds like it was active, and you had a third thing to go that you had tonight?
And it's about discrimination. You know, both of you guys are straight white males, right?
Last time I checked.
Okay. But, I mean, do you really know what discrimination is about? I mean, when somebody will, and I'm just saying this because I've heard you mention Rudolph Nureyev in some of your public service announcements. And maybe if people like Ronald Reagan had been more active against AIDS, Rudolph Nureyev would still be teaching someone how to dance.
Well, you're very right there. You know, I mean,
he died at AIDS.
I can't. Well, I know that, and you know, I can't say that I know discrimination from a firsthand point of view on any way that, you know, someone who's either, you know, gay or, you know, African American or, geez, at the moment, Muslim living in America or even here in Australia. However, I have lived a life that has not separated me from those people. And I've had people very close to me that have been the victims of, and I have witnessed them be the victims of.
Nice.
And so I think I have maybe not a firsthand understanding, but I sure know it's out there, and I can appreciate what effect that would have on someone who's been the subject of it.
Right. I mean, for example, like Matthew Shepard and some of the other hate crimes that have ensued because of intolerance and bigotry and this type of thing. And it's a horrible thing, I guess, to have to take a can of spray paint and at least correct the spelling of faggot when somebody sprayed it across your garage door, you know?
Well, I mean, I've said before that I normally think that the perpetrators of such things are usually those who are probably gay themselves and are the most afraid of ever being found out, and those are acts of overreaching and compensation, because you cannot show me anything that says that, you know, a gay couple cannot raise a child. You cannot show me, you know, anything. And this constant, you know, by this administration bashing and trying to second-class citizenize the gay and lesbian community, you know, is just a way of dividing up the stupid from the thoughtful, I think.
I'll tell you, there's a good book that I would suggest that you read. It's by Randy Stills, who also wrote And the Band Played On. And this book is called Coming Up on Memorial Day. And this book is called Conduct Unbecoming. And I would suggest that you read it. And it basically describes the gay servicemen and women who have served honorably and well and who have fought side by side, shared the same foxhole, the same berth, and things of that nature, and there have been no problems. And I simply cannot understand why what President Clinton did not keep his promise to the gay and lesbian community. For that, I will never forgive him.
Well, you know, my feelings are mixed on Bill Clinton, and I wonder if that's just something that he wasn't able to get at with, you know, I mean, I think he did a pretty good job of staying his own course and plan with all the distractions that were thrown at him through his career. You know, I'm not particularly a fan, but I can see how you'd be disappointed for him not following through.
Well, you know, I'm just looking at it from I have no dog in this fight, but I'm simply looking at it from the perspective of history. As Commander-in-Chief, he could have told those people in the Pentagon who objected to it that I will have your resignations on my desk first thing in the morning. And that would have been it.
Mm.
And now we have a policy that doesn't work, never has worked, never will work. Pentagon is still spending millions of dollars on witch hunts and things of this nature. And we are far, far, far from being any type of free society in which all men and women are given equal protection under the law, free of discrimination.
Yeah, and constitutional amendments are never written to exclude anyone. Amendments are always about reaffirming and inclusion. So the simple fact of trying to utilize something like a constitutional amendment just doesn't even fly legally. But Jim, I got to wrap it up here. We're coming up on our soft break here, and I appreciate you calling in, man. It's always good to have you ring in. Did we lose him? Anyway, Bruce, you still there?
Okay, yeah, I'm here. I just wanted to see you get scared.
Oh, Well, okay, well, you hung up. Well, thanks.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks, Jim, for calling in, and we really appreciate those comments. I think we do have a break. We'll take this quick break, ladies and gentlemen. It's about 46 minutes past the hour. You're listening to Fourth Estate Radio. If you want to get in on the conversation, you have that ability, and we'll pick up the dime. Give us a call, 1-877-443-2366. That's 1-877, the number 4, head-on. They'll get you into the studios of the Head-On Radio Network in wild, wonderful West Virginia. John and I will be right back.
It stands out on the highway like a creature from another time. It inspires the baby's question,
what's that?
For their mothers as they rhyme. But no one stopped to think about the babies or how they would survive. And we've almost lost.
Close your eyes for a moment and imagine you're away from it all on a remote, unspoiled beach somewhere. Take a deep breath and enjoy the warm sea air. Sunlight streams through the palm trees as gulls call out from above. A real paradise like this isn't easy to come by, but it does still exist. And with your help, places like this one can last forever. You see, the Nature Conservancy works locally with communities, businesses, and people like you to preserve the most precious natural places around the world. They protect the animals that live there, the plants that grow there, and even the water. That way, this beautiful place will be beautiful forever. And we'll make sure that closing your eyes will never be the only way to get there. I'm Paul Newman. Help the Nature Conservancy save the last great places.
Visit the Nature Conservancy at nature.org. That's nature.org.
Hi, I'm Joanne Woodward. Ever notice how many things in life happen in a circle? The seasons, revolving credit, hula hoops, the spinning of the circle we call Earth, and recycling. Together, we've already made a difference. Sorting glass, plastic, separating cans, stacking newspapers. Now there are lots of products made from things we've already recycled. A paperclip, in a more daring life, a 56 convertible, a cereal box, once your Sunday paper. It all goes back to the circle. It starts when we recycle trash at home and at work. It's completed when we buy products made from recycled materials. How do you know the difference? Check the label for something called post-consumer recycled content. Then buy the highest percentage of it you can find. You'll save a tree, you'll save energy, and in your own way, you'll help save the world. Complete the circle.
For your free Buy Recycled shopping guide, call 1-800-2-RECYCLE. A message from the Ad Council and Environmental Defense. Finding the ways that work.
Every 3 minutes, another woman gets the news that she has breast cancer. And here are some of the first words she hears. HER2 new oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? This is Olivia Newton-John. As soon as you get your diagnosis, you can go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options. Prepare a list of questions for your next doctor's visit and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Everybody loving it.
All right, welcome back to Fourth Estate Radio. It's, something like 10 minutes before the hour. My name is John Fox in Sydney, Australia. Bruce Birch in Greensboro, North Carolina. And there's a couple of interesting, wide-ranging things that Jim rang in with. But, he's talking about the everything from racism to, doing something for your fellow man. You know, I mean, I thought that was kind of interesting, you know, instead of just, you know, being like a lot of other people at the time that would have, you know, thrown that young boy away. He, after speaking with the child's mother, ended up taking him on because it gave him a better chance, you know. A little bit more of that in this world and we might get going somewhere, you know.
I think that's fantastic. I mean, I not enough of that happens. As a matter of fact, I was up in Virginia, in the state to the north of us today, and was riding down one of the highways there and saw a billboard that basically spelled out very clearly that there's a huge need for adoptive families up there. So still today, that is an issue. But I wanted to get us over into Occupation Watch, John, and as of today, since the war began on March 19th, 2003, 2,464 soldiers have died, American soldiers have died over there. And since Chucklenuts declared mission accomplished on May the 1st of 2003, 2,327 soldiers have died, and in combat, that number would be 1,890. And, of course, on the Iraqi side of that count, you know, the estimates vary very, very widely, anywhere from 250,000 to perhaps as many as 150,000. So, still an ungodly number. And that brings me to tonight's story, and I'm going to read you this. A little bit of a story, and John, you can comment on it, or we can talk about it either way. Photographs taken by a Marine intelligence team have convinced investigators that a Marine unit killed as many as 24 unarmed Iraqis, some of them execution style, in the insurgents' stronghold of Haditha after a roadside bomb killed an American in November. Officials who are close to the investigation said Friday, the pictures are said to show wounds to the upper bodies of the victims, who included several women and six children. Some were shot in the head and some in the back, congressional and defense officials said. One government official said the pictures showed that infantry Marines from Camp Pendleton suffered a total breakdown in morality and leadership with tragic results. And, John, I'm bringing this up, and it's not to disparage the soldiers that are serving in any way. What it is, the reason why I'm bringing this up is because I want to illustrate what can happen if the proper leadership isn't in place. And I can't help but think that this story, the story at Abu Ghraib, the stories of various torturings that have happened in Iraq and in Afghanistan are merely the result of faulty leadership, and I believe personally that that goes all the way to the very commander in chief. You know, and it's only going to get worse.
No doubt. No doubt. And playing into this, you know, I imagine you saw some of the footage of Bush and Blair having their little, you know, kind of bizarre little whimper session that they had together, which was completely unconvincing to me. You know, Blair was much more convincing than Bush, but, you know, Bush suddenly now pulling back on the, you know, bring it on thing and all that, trying to allude to the fact that this is the only thing that's wrong. And these two guys are now following the whole, who's our friend who's been calling all this with Iran and Iraq for months now? Help
Seymour
me, Bruce!
Hirsch.
Help me! Seymour Hirsch. They're talking about an accelerated pullout of on the ground troop levels, and we know what that's going to mean. That's going to mean more airstrikes and the ability to make it harder to report on actually what's going on in the ground, because once you go to an air campaign, it makes it much harder for the press to follow what's actually going on the ground.
It absolutely does, and I think that there's also, you know, just to not to muddy the waters at all, but you know, the Taliban in Afghanistan, I mean, you know, let's call it for what it is. we invaded Afghanistan, and we thought we had everything secured over there. As I reported, I can't remember if it was this week or last week, opium production is at an all-time high. The most amount of opium that they have ever produced in Afghanistan was this year. That in and of itself is as a result of our lack of attention to keeping that country secure. And, you know, it just amazes me. It just completely amazes me. We went in there for, 3 months, and then we left. And then Afghanistan became the redheaded stepchild of our invasion categories. You know, and we went right into Iraq. And you know what's going to happen? I hate to say this. I really don't want to see this happen. But, you know, we may see the same movie all over again with Iran.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, it was only within the last, 4 to 6 months ago that we talked about the fact that, you know, before we went into Afghanistan, the Taliban had pretty much eradicated the poppy crop, which meant that the worldwide supply of heroin was at an all-time low. And ever since we went in, it's just regained its speed and its momentum. And not only that, the Taliban themselves have come out to say that, well, you've done this here, so now we're going to actually use the income from the crop that we once eradicated to help get money to fight your bums. You know what I mean? And I can tell you, because we are closer to it than you are, we will direct impact of that alone right here in Sydney. Because we do have a much bigger heroin problem than the United States does. And it's all due to proximity, you know. And I know that in the States, over the last couple of years, you're seeing purity of stuff that has never been seen in the United States before.
Yeah. And it wouldn't surprise me.
And that means,
I was going to say, it wouldn't surprise me any to hear that, because a lot of this went on, apparently, a lot of this went on during Vietnam as well, to hear about any sort of CIA involvement in smuggling and making money for black ops, et cetera. I mean, that did happen back in the 60s and could possibly happen again.
Forget Iran-Contra.
Yeah.
You know, I got into an argument
today or yesterday with someone about Oliver North. They sent me this email about Oliver North and Osama bin Laden, and these people out there, they'll believe anything. They will believe. You send it in an email, go, and just put an American flag at the top of the email, and these people, there are people out there that will just, they'll eat it up, and they'll go, oh my God, Osama bin Laden is going to attack my house. He's going to attack my, he's going to jump out of my TV screen. Oh my God. All right. I got that off my chest. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Fourth Estate Radio. My name's Bruce Birch. That's John Fox. If you want to get in on the radio program, you can do so by dialing 1-877-443-2366. We'll be right back for Hour 3 of Fourth Estate Radio.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
And I'm Jesse Russell.
AFL-CIO President John Sweeney joined hundreds of New Jersey nurses for a rally at Liberty State Park in Jersey City Wednesday night. Thousands of nurses have authorized a strike if necessary in contract talks with 9 New Jersey hospitals. The nurses are concerned about working conditions, staffing ratios, and the union rights of charge nurses. Sweeney says the National Labor Relations Board is also about to decide 3 cases known collectively as the Kentucky River decisions. Employers have been pushing for a broad definition of supervisory employees, including charge nurses, that would take away union representation rights for workers who are newly defined as supervisory. Sweeney is kicking off a national campaign to educate the public about these coming decisions. He says hundreds of thousands of workers, and not just nurses, are at risk of losing their union rights if the NLRB takes the employer's side in these decisions.
An increasing number of assaults on bus drivers in Toronto has the union asking members to stop requesting fares from passengers. The Amalgamated Transit Union represents more than 8,000 employees for the Toronto Transit Commission. The current fare cost for passengers is $2.75 Canadian, roughly $2.45 in U.S. dollars. Bob Kinnear, president of the ATU Local 113, said the transportation commissioners have done little to stop the increase of fares and as a result have pitted drivers versus passengers.
Putting the responsibility onto us and pitting the public against us when it's the inability of them to secure the proper funding so the public out there wouldn't have to pay the exorbitant amount of fares that they are paying currently.
Kinnear said that not only do victims of attacks suffer physically, they are also impacted financially.
It is outrageous that victims of crime and their families have to suffer financially because they were attacked for doing their job.
Studies have shown that nearly 70% of drivers have been the victims of assaults ranging from spitting to stabbing. Kinnear said between 1999 and 2003, assaults rose by 31%.
Bankruptcy hearings for Delphi are underway this week. The giant auto parts maker is trying to throw out its union contracts as it destroys more than 20,000 good U.S. jobs in favor of moving production to cheap overseas labor markets. Delphi wants to slash the wages of those workers who remain after these jobs are destroyed.
Here is today's economic report. Surprise! New home sales bucked the national housing sector slide in April. Sales are down 5.7% over last year, but April marked the second straight month in 2006 that the market saw growth. New home sales rose by 4.9% in April, but economists do remain cautious, suggesting that the increase is part of a larger, orderly decline across the entire market.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Woke up this morning, I suddenly realized we're all in this together. I started smiling, 'cause you were smiling, and we're all in this together. I'm made of atoms, you're made of atoms, and we're all in this together. And long division just doesn't matter, 'cause we're all in this together. Yeah.
And now the final hour of Fourth Estate Radio. This is Conversation Radio, so ring Bruce and John on 1-877-4 head on. That's 1-877-443-2366. Your voice is useless until you use it. Here's John and Bruce.
All right, welcome back to Fourth Estate Radio. This is John Fox in Sydney, Australia, and Bruce Birch up on the north side in Greensboro, North Carolina. And Bruce, we're going to move on to domestic wiretapping and spying, I do believe. And I've got a little bit of Australian comedy a little bit later on in this half hour. But what do you have for us?
Is Australian comedy anything like British comedy? I mean, do we have to actually like figure it out before we laugh, or?
There's only a couple of things that I will preface it with. I'm trying to think of what terminology they use. GST is goods and services tax. And Hillsong is the mega church here in New South Wales, and it's a very, very peculiar organization.
Right.
I've spoken about them before, and our good friend Darp at darpism.com, I believe it is, happens to puts a bit of a focus on the Hillsong Church and the fact that people who attend some of them will even donate virtually all of their salary to the church and then get all of their services back out of the church, which is a tax-free entity. Mm-hmm. Anyway, you have a bit of domestic spying to get into, don't you there, Bruce?
I've always got some domestic spying to get into because that's kind of like it seems to be my pet issue. I have actually. I want to cover a story that came out today, or actually as we speak, where I'm sitting yesterday, and I guess where you are, that would be yesterday too, eh? Saturday, in other words. Vice President Cheney, Vice President Cheney. Okay, I can't help myself. Vice President Cheney highlighted America's intelligence efforts yesterday as critical tools in the fight against terrorists at home and abroad, and vowed the administration would continue a controversial eavesdropping program that he said has been wrongly dubbed domestic surveillance. Cheney said during a graduation address at the U.S. Naval Academy in Annapolis, I quote, "I want each one of you to know that the president will not relent in the effort to track the enemies of the United States with every legitimate tool in his command. This is not a war we can win on the defensive. Our only option against these enemies is to monitor them, to find them, to fight them, and to destroy them." And I just channeled Cheney. So, John, I wanted to bring this to the fore because, you know, these guys, see, the difference between what happened in the, are you still with me, John?
Yes, I am, man. Yes.
Okay.
I'm just brooding over what you've been reading.
Okay. My assessment of this administration and the difference between what they are doing and what Richard Nixon is doing is it's very typical in white-collar crimes. The larger the scope of the crime, the more legitimate it is. Like for instance, instead of wiretapping the Democratic campaign office or whatever it was at the Watergate hotel in D.C., they're wiretapping everyone else. Which makes it, if I'm being wiretapped, my buddy next door is being wiretapped, well, both buddies next door are being wiretapped, and, you know, Bob Kincaid's being, I mean, it makes it all, we're all in this together, right? We're all in this together. So it makes it more legitimized. And no, it doesn't. It actually, as we talked before, ladies and gentlemen, as we talked before about the trickle-down effect. Now, trickle-down economics, as put forth by this president and by, what is his name, Ronald Reagan, doesn't work. However, trickle-down crime does. And my feeling is that this administration has broken the law in so many places, in so many ways, that it sort of has trickled down to state and local police departments and has given them the idea that they, too, can engage in espionage on a local level. And, okay, John, you can stop me anytime.
Well, all I keep thinking about is, you know, and this week we've had, you know, Pillsbury Doughboy with stars on. What's that jello-faced guy who just got approved this week? You know?
Well, Hayden.
My God, Bruce. I do not understand, and I really don't want to get completely pulled off on a tangent, but I do not understand how the Democrats and the Republicans alike could approve a military guy to be the head of the domestic intelligence agency. There is a basic separation of powers just dictated in the way it's organized. And the fact that this guy is the one who engineered the entire domestic spying thing to begin with, well, you know, it's putting, you know, it's putting the fox in charge of the hen house. Hate to use a pun that I can't stand for personal reasons, but, you know, it's like, okay, you don't like what you're hearing coming out of there, so we're going to stick a guy in charge so that you don't hear anything coming out of here. And the attacks on the people who have leaked this stuff, you know, I just, it's so Stalinly organized. It's, I keep hearing the boots marching more in unison in the background in my mind, you know.
Yes, and if I had a boots button I could push, we would hear them going. clip. Well, and the reason why I even brought any of that up is because I myself have signed on to an ACLU request here in the state of North Carolina against the Greensboro Police Department to produce all and any such materials that they may have gathered during the January 31st State of the Union address protest that I attended here in Greensboro. Because our
waiting
city
for you to bring
here,
it up. I've been hoping you would.
Well, I finally decided to bring it up, and actually I signed on to this a couple weeks ago. But I did so, and actually it's on my blog at brucebirch.com. I wrote a little thing up about why I did this. But I wanted to sort of talk about domestic spying for a minute, because in my mind, this is probably the worst possible encroachment of our civil liberties that is out there for several reasons. Not the least of which is that it is an invasion of privacy to a certain degree, because, you know, but it also serves to chill dissent. It serves to, domestic spying serves to chill our own constitutionally given rights to, you know, a First Amendment of the Constitution, the first one in the Bill of Rights, our right to free speech.
Absolutely. And I'm glad that you're bringing this up on air, because, you know, you've actually been, you know, a very boots on the ground guy, and you've been seeing, you know, some of this, shall we say, encroachment on civil liberties firsthand.
Yes, ma'am.
And, you know, this is no joke. This seriously is no joke. I mean, you know, I'm hoping that we have some new listeners this week due to some of the promotion that we've gotten via Brad blog and whatnot. And, you know, for those of you who don't know, you know, I mean, Bruce has been, you know, in D.C. He's been everywhere over the last few months. And there have been some, shall I say, some moments that you haven't felt the most comfortable being a vocal person.
Seriously,
man. Well, yeah, I'm trying to find a nice way to say it without saying, because those bastards are spying on you and making you feel afraid to go out and do your and exercise your constitutional rights. Arg.
Right. Well, that is the deal. And you know what? I mean, I'll say it out here on the radio, and I don't really care. You know, I mean, I know that. I don't even want to get into who downloads our show, but point being is that to me, and I, you know, to anyone who's listening, to me, you know, you can take my rights when you pry them from my cold, dead fingers. And I've said that before, and I'll say it again. Because to me, if we don't have any of those constitutional rights in this country, and we don't exercise them, then we have nothing. We don't have a country without those. We have no country without our Constitution. What we have at that point is a totalitarian regime. And with the encroachments that have been made in the area of domestic surveillance, in the areas of the the various databases that have been created, and who knows? I mean, you know, guys, I got to tell you, the domestic wiretapping, where they say that it upwards of, you know, what they said, 100 million people have been wiretapped or eavesdropped on, et cetera. That's the tip of the iceberg. that's not the extent.
Okay.
That's not. You know, with this particular government and this and these folks in charge, John Poindexter, Total Information Awareness, hello, they changed the name of it and called it something else and stuck him in the NSA.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't want to, get off on too much. I know we need to take a break, but, I just wanted to bring that up. And maybe we'll talk about that some after the break. I know you wanted to preface something else. But, you know, to me, we've got to It is imperative that each one of us do what we can to try to subvert that kind of stuff. And whether it's, you know, speaking our mind at the grocery store or writing a letter to the editor, you know, or keeping tabs on our individual communities' police departments to find out where their money is coming from and what they're spending it on, such as Homeland Security grants and little items like cameras that look like fence posts or something.
Well, yeah, and you know, what was it, about a month ago you were talking about the how they're starting local branches of Homeland Security within local police forces?
Absolutely. Yes, they are. And they have.
You know, and this is all being and this all go ahead.
What I was going to say is that let's take a quick break and we'll come back and come back to this. If you're interested, we'll come back to this topic because there's a few. I've done some research over the last week.
That's fine.
And a half that may surprise.
Okay.
You.
Okay.
So.
Okay, we'll do that, and so we're going to have a little bit of a comedy break here, as we go out, just because I have Agnes set this up already, and. As we go out, you're going to hear we have one of two programs here that I think together qualify as two daily shows. And one of them is called The Chasers, War and Everything, and you can take a look at their website at abc.net.au/chaser. And these guys do a really, really fast kind of program with a live audience, clips, and they do current events. And I've mentioned Hillsong Church before. And about a week after, the guy who has done comedy music did a song about how comedy music doesn't work and he's not wasting his time writing anymore. They did a big production thing on the Hillsong Church, set up a big Hillsong backdrop, and like any good megachurch Christian boy band, performed the following song. So Agnes is going to roll this tune, and we will see you on the other side of this break, and we'll talk more about domestic spying and the loss of civil liberties on Fourth Estate Radio. Hit it, Agnes.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will.
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah! Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. It's not the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD. Just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, many a moolah. Saw the gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches.
What's it like?
What's it like?
It's lonely.
It's really lonely.
I miss my brother.
I miss my brother.
I'm surrounded by other people, but it's not the same.
I've got other people around me, but it's not the same.
It's pretty scary, but I don't let it rattle me.
It's scary around here, but I don't let it rattle me.
You always have to watch your back.
There's no one to watch my back.
I spend my whole day worried who's out to get me.
I'm always wondering who's out to get me.
But I can take care of myself.
But I can take care of myself.
No matter what, I'll keep my head up.
No matter what, I'll keep my head up.
It's not like I have a choice.
It's not like I have a choice.
This'll all be over in 5 years, 3 months, and 17 days.
This'll all be over in 5 years, 3 months, and 17 days.
Go to jail for a gun crime and your family serves a sentence with you. Something to think about before committing a gun crime. Gun crimes hit home. This message brought to you by Project Safe Neighborhoods and the Ad Council.
Thank you.
turn back.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Fourth Estate Radio. John Fox here, Bruce Birch on the other side of the globe. Hope you all enjoyed that. I really thought that was pretty clever. Bruce Birch,
indeed.
We're going to talk more domestic spying, I believe.
We are going to talk more to domestic spying. I have a Google for you, okay?
Okay.
The Google is Project Ceasefire. Okay?
Uh-huh.
Project Ceasefire. This is the Google, and this is a South Carolina thing, okay? So if you see a link that pops up that says South Carolina, you'll know what I'm talking about. All right? Project Ceasefire. Now, let me tell you a little bit about Project Ceasefire.
Please do.
There was a program that was initiated by the Department of Homeland Security, and this was a pilot project in Columbia, South Carolina, where listening devices were installed in violent crime areas, and they were able to, as they called it, triangulate the gunfire down to, if I remember reading correctly, 40 feet. Within 40 feet of where the actual gunfire occurred. And
well, that doesn't surprise me that that's possible at all, but it's scary that they do it.
Well, the reason why I'm bringing this up is because I think that there's a couple things. The first thing is that we have here it is. It's actually, and I'll post the link in the chat room. It is actually amazing how this program works. It's called ShotSpotter, called the ShotSpotter system, and it actually has acoustic sensors that are linked by phone lines to a computer to tell dispatchers where guns are fired. It allows officers to get to the scene quickly, allowing them to preserve evidence and helping get guns off the streets. I have a question, though, and the question that I have about this, number one, is when could this program called Project Ceasefire, or ShotSpotter, if you will, when could this get retrained or recalibrated or reworked to actually listen in on other things?
Wouldn't take much at all, and the idea of mathematically triangulating is exactly how your cell phone knows how to find you at any time, seriously, being an audio guy, it probably would not be very, very hard even for them to, you know, isolate down to what they think could be nerve center chatterbox areas for, you know, see, what I fear is them listening into protest organizers and marchers as they're getting ready to, do whatever it is that they are doing to voice their opinions. You know, I mean, it's all fine and dandy under the cloak of stopping gun violence, but this still, to me, qualifies as just blanket eavesdropping on the public. I mean, you cannot have a conversation on the street with your child without being listened to, is what you're setting up to me. And all they'd have to do is link up your cell phone and they sit there and follow your conversation on the road. It wouldn't be that hard, man.
I don't think it would be that hard either. And I think that and you're absolutely right that, you know, John, you know me well enough to know where I'm heading with things. You know, what's scary about this? And you know what? I absolutely am for the abolition of any kind of private gun violence, any kind of gun violence, whether it's police or anyone. I mean, you know, here in Greensboro, we also have a history of, extreme force being used when, you know, it may not be necessary. But, you know, what you know, I'm all for you know, the end of violence in a lot in all these cases. What bothers me is that if we get into the idea that we are now recording or we are now listening into the general public at large out in the open, where's I mean, there is a line that's there. The line is, okay, where can they listen? You know, can the government also listen in to? I mean, they can listen into us anytime we're outside of our home, right? Would that be a reasonable statement?
I would also say that they could possibly listen to a certain ability inside your home. Okay, you can use the math of the triangulation in reverse in a way, and focus triangulated microphones on a space by playing with some time alignment and maybe possibly phase. And Ben Burch would probably be the first one to jump in here and go, where they could very possibly, with units outside your home, as long as they're able to get a fix, could very possibly spy from within your home. And I'm not meaning to be all, like, you know, scary and all that about it, but I do not see it being hard and being able to do it with much more than a PC. If you're able to get access in real time to these things, time align three streams together, you should be able to, you know, if you can triangulate the position of gunfire by, you know, calculating the differences on the time relationships between the three samples, you can do the opposite to focus in on a point.
Yeah.
And this is where there's some interesting technology that, just to finish this off, I remember about a decade ago in, I believe it was Audio and Technology, where they were testing out localized PA systems and what these were. And the example that they used for it was, say, a public parking garage. You go and you check into this underground car park. The computer takes a picture of your face as you get out of the car and leave. And now anyone else who approaches your car that is not matched to your face print will get a localized voice, not through speakers that everybody can hear, but a localized voice down to 2 meters, in which someone will say, "That is not your car."
Wow.
And this brings in, you know, where when I hear people saying that they hear voices in their head, I sometimes don't necessarily say that they're nuts, because this technology, and what's funny is after this, you know, they were talking about, it was in a testing thing, and, you know, this was way back a while ago, and I've never heard much of it since, but this is the application type of thing that they were looking to use it for. And, I mean, imagine, say, you know, for some reason the wrong picture got associated with your car, and you came back and all of a sudden you hear a voice going, "You are not the owner of this car." And, you know, you're feeling like, that's, you know, Noah and the old Bill Cosby thing, sitting there going, "Somebody call me," you know. But anyway, we're coming up on a break, Bruce, and we'll do this break real quick and come back and continue right here, and we'll go straight to the phones as well when we come back. So you're listening to John Fox and Bruce Burch up in Greensboro, North Carolina, here on Fourth Estate Radio. We're chatting at headonradionetwork.com. Jump in the pool. I'll be in there after the show, and we will see you after this break.
Thank you. fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Treat me with understanding.
Treat me with respect.
Drug and alcohol addiction is an equal opportunity disease.
Treat me without judgment.
Individuals in recovery come from all walks of life and deserve to be treated with respect for winning one of the hardest battles there is.
Treat me with courtesy.
Treat me with humanity.
Alcohol and drug addiction deserves proper treatment. For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Joanne Woodward. Ever notice how many things in life happen in a circle? The seasons, revolving credit, hula hoops, the spinning of the circle we call Earth, and recycling. Together, we've already made a difference. Sorting glass, plastic, separating cans, stacking newspapers. Now there are lots of products made from things we've already recycled. A paperclip, in a more daring life, a 56 convertible, a cereal box, once your Sunday paper. It all goes back to the circle. It starts when we recycle trash at home and at work. It's completed when we buy products made from recycled materials. How do you know the difference? Check the label for something called post-consumer recycled content. Then buy the highest percentage of it you can find. You'll save a tree, you'll save energy, and in your own way, you'll help save the world. Complete the circle.
For your free Buy Recycled shopping guide, call 1-800-2-RECYCLE. A message from the Ad Council and Environmental Defense. Finding the ways that work.
Radio. This is Bruce Birch, and over there is John Fox. And John, I think we have a message we want to send out. What you want? You ready?
Go for it,
Agent Fred. We love you. Okay. All right. You can interchange love with any other action word that you can think of. That's right. You have that option. Let's go over the phones. I understand
That's
we have
idea.
Our good friend Andrew from New York waiting. And, Andrew, how are you doing tonight? Welcome to Fourth Estate Radio.
I'm doing okay. How are you doing, John and Bruce? Doing good?
Doing good, man.
That's good.
Phantasmal.
So, you can triangulate.
I understand.
Huh?
Yeah, I understand you've been triangulating to get in on the phone lines tonight.
Well, a little bit, but hey, that comes with the territory. So, you know, we can't do anything
with
that. I mean, you just got to try and keep the common thieves from, you know, off your stuff. But it's like, you know, you would think they would have something like that in the Capitol building, right?
No kidding. What brings you ringing in tonight?
Just, you know, calling up to say, you know, how you doing and stuff like that. But you know, Negroponte, the Black Death. The Black Death has been loose on the SEC, huh? Huh?
Well, Well, I mean, you know, if there ever was a criminal in government, he's the one, man.
Pretty much.
You know, Mr. Death Squads himself.
Pretty much. Pretty much.
You know.
But now he's going to start teaching the financials.
It seems like this, you know, they're working on this next step to make this whole kind of one fear campaign and the attempt to stifle speech and whatnot.
Well, they did
but it's accelerating, you know, as it becomes more and more exposed. I see the whole thing turning so reminiscent of Stalinist, the way that they're going about, you know, going ahead and putting up figureheads to mount certain arms of the government to make sure that things stay in line and that nothing, no information opposed to that comes out.
Yeah, I hear you, but I don't think it's just certain. I think it's all of them. I mean, they have the judicial lockdown. They have Congress at their beck and call. They have the military at their beck and call.
The military, unfortunately, is held hostage due to what they've signed on for.
Yeah, no.
So,
soldier is, you know, they follow the chain of command. That's the way they've been, you know, trained. You know,
and it is very hard when the chain of command is doing things so counter to the system. It can be very, very difficult to break that chain of command or, you know, do much to make it clear to the people, you know, of the United States and elsewhere how kind of criminal and crooked the whole thing's gotten to be because, you know, these reports of cold-blooded killings of innocent Iraqis by our Marines can only be attributed to the fact that they're overstressed, overstretched, and in a bad situation way too long.
Yeah, 3 years. 3 years now. 3 years plus, and it's not getting any, well, we all know it's not getting any better, but that's what they want. So everything, Iraq is going according to plan under Bush, though. And
all right, well,
it's going to plan. Let's just be brass tacks about this. This is not, you know, we're not going to be pulling, you know, it's going to plan. Iraq is just where they want it to be right now. Total chaos.
Oh, I absolutely agree. You know, this has been a massive case of organized chaos, which, you know, allows them to loot without, you know, anyone being able to say anything because, you know, the whole thing's chaotic. You know, I mean, we know about the billions disappearing in bags up, you know, up choppers, all these other things, you know. But, you know, you live where I grew up, and, you know, I would think that, you know, New Yorkers have got to just be beside themselves.
Pretty much. It's like now you're hearing a lot of things. I live in the 19th Congressional District. My representative Sue Kelly, which she's got to go, and
right.
It's not that she's like overly malicious, but she has to go. She's just, you know, she's not there. She hasn't matured yet. But
you know it has to be that the grandstanding that is done about 9/11 and the grandstanding on what happened in Manhattan has got to be wearing so thin on the New York people.
Yeah, that's their enabling act, you know. That's the enabling. That was the enabling act for him to institute the Patriot Act. But like you said, as far as, you know, like the war and everything and sentiment up here as far as Republicans, and now Republicans up here, which is where I live, is a very Republican area. They are saying, I can't support him anymore. They used to try and support him. And they don't like, the stench is so bad that now they say, if somebody starts, you know, debating politics with them, they'll be like, well, I can't back them. I can't support them. I have no argument and I'm not saying anything. So basically they're checking out because they're in withdrawal.
There's definitely an attempt by
where people are like saying, I'm not supporting the Democrats, but I don't care. I'm trying to regroup.
Well, yeah, and you're seeing the, you know, the Republicans themselves, you know, stepping back and taking issue with the administration, and I'm starting to think that that is the thing that it's going to take to finally kick it over into getting some actual change.
Yeah.
Is that the Republicans are seeing that, you know, it's time, you know, I want my party back, to quote Colin Powell's former chief of staff.
I used to notice they used to try and, you know, debate with you and argue with you and, you know, give the Rush Limbaugh talking points. But now they don't have any fight in them. And this is a Republican.
Well, they know it rings hollow.
None. They have no fight. They
know.
I mean.
Well, they know it rings hollow. It doesn't work anymore. It absolutely does.
Yes. Sue Kelly, my representative, may win again only because people that aren't as astute or up or aware will vote for her again because she's been in there so long. But as far as the people that know, especially the Republicans in the know, they didn't give up the fight. They're like, they're pissed, pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it makes me really, really, you know, miss the days of Ed Koch in New York City.
Yeah.
You know, a guy that was, you know, whether you agreed with him or not, was enough of a man of the people to actually win the nomination on both tickets in 1 year, where he actually ended up running against himself. You know, and I just I constantly wonder what it would be like if I still lived in the city, you know, like I used to, because I would just be beside myself every time that these guys would use that call of 9/11, 9/11, 9/11.
I mean, this one is offended every time. Like, I know I'm offended every time he invokes it, you know, for his fear-mongering. And, you know, that's his main, I guess he's done a thesis on 9/11 over the past 5 years, which is totally just malicious. But, you know, that's what he is.
Well, you know, they grandstand on the thing after, you know, they lied about the air quality and let, you know, rescue workers in before they should have.
Yeah.
You know, they dumped the bodies in a landfill in Staten Island, you know, the steel that was salvaged.
Shipped all the scrap metal
to
China.
Insane.
You know, to bring back here as cheap junk. And then you can't do any kind of forensics on it. That's foul.
Of course not. Of course not. They never wanted any. They never wanted. Yes, please.
I'm going to jump in here, guys. Did you know that right now down in, I want to say Alabama or Louisiana or Mississippi.
Yeah.
That the USS New York.
Yes. Yes,
is being built with steel from the World Trade Center.
Yeah.
Oh my God!
Yes.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
When is this thing scheduled to be built?
It's almost done.
Eight or something? Or what? 9? 10?
No.
Is that going to be our next codpiece moment going into Iran? Is Bush going to stand upon this boat that was built with the steel?
When he spends the 2008 elections, that's going to be the next codpiece moment. He's going to be selling it on the New Yorker. Talking about, I got to suspend the elections because we're still at war. Please.
Oh, mate, I'm so fearful of that very move. I am so fearful of that move, and I've been fearful of that move for almost 5 years.
Yeah, man. Well, it's starting to become a reality. And that's the way I see it.
Well,
That's where we're at. We're on the
We got to get our hands on the reins of this thing, man, because the old horsey's gone straight off the pasture. It's just gone absolutely off. You know, this is nuts. This is enough already.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Absolutely enough already.
Yeah.
I
it's going to take some people on the inside. It's going to take some people on the inside. I mean,
which those are the holes that they're actively trying to plug now, because that's what this regime fears most. Is the people inside who are tired of watching this go down and be party to it.
Mm-hmm. It's going to have to, you know, it's either going to be a military revolt, which I think is very slim, or it's going to be a revolt inside their own ranks just to save their own hides, because they know once everybody else is gone, they're next. Whoever's lowest on the totem pole, they get gobbled up next. Just the way it goes.
Yeah.
That's what they think.
No kidding. And the prosecutions need to go up the chain, not down.
Yeah.
That was another thing that was really hollow.
We don't have to start at the bottom. We got to start at the top and just work your way down.
Well, hey, man, I tell you what, thanks for ringing in. And it's always it's always good to hear from the great state of New York, happening to be just a big part of my history. So thanks for ringing in, man, because we got to take a break and then I think wrap things up, Bruce.
Indeed.
All righty.
And
nice. Have a good night.
Yeah. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
All right. Good night, mate.
Yep. Take it easy.
Talk to you soon.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Good calls tonight, man.
Oh man, we get great calls all the time. It's just this is fantastic conversation radio, and I guess we do want to take that break then, don't we? You're listening to Fourth Estate Radio. This is Bruce Birch, and that is John Fox. And if you want to get in on the program, you may have 1 second to get in. 1-877-433-3666 is our number. We'll be right back.
Love just one nation. In the whole world we divide. You say you're sorry. It's no other choice. God bless the people now. Cannot raise their voice. We can chase down all our enemies.
I'm Lee Hamilton.
And I'm Tom Kane. Together we chaired the 9/11 Commission.
We accomplished a lot because we worked together. Now we need your help.
You voted. Now stay interested and participate.
It's time to work together to do what's right for our country.
Attorney.
CEO.
Eighth grader.
Publisher.
Retired.
No matter what the occupation or age, people who suffer from alcohol and drug addiction are all in the same boat. But with treatment, you can make it to solid ground. At any point, no matter how old or young you are, you can choose to get treatment. And through treatment comes recovery.
You can do it!
Mommy!
Come on!
We'll help you.
I made it. I really made it.
For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
In the early hours after the tsunami, it was ham radio that was on the air, saving lives. When Florida was ripped by hurricanes, the hams were there. In the critical moments after the attack of 9/11, it was the hams who coordinated emergency messages. When disasters strike, the hams are ready. Ham radio works when other communications don't. To learn how you can become a ham radio operator, call the ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio, at 1-800-326-3942.
This is Guy James, host of The Guy James Show. If you like factual, hard-hitting, liberal radio, yes, I said liberal, then I believe you'll like our show. We're a proud member of the Head On Radio Network, heard Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time at theguyjamesshow.com. You heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
Well, my baby, she don't want me around. She says
she's inside. I'm watching me fall.
All right, we're back on Forza State Radio. I'm thinking about having some moons over my hammy radio. What do you think, John? Maybe some my hammy vice?
Yeah, my hammy vice. When you brought up moons over my hammy, I just remembered really bad late night breakfast at Denny's on the New Jersey Turnpike.
Oh man. Turnpike. You walk in there and you're thinking, you're alive, or is this going to be the last meal I ever have?
Well, it was either that or IHOP. Those were at in that day and age the two options whilst traveling post gig.
That's what we have here. But, South we have the Waffle House where you can walk anywhere you go. You can go in and yes, it's the same woman in every restaurant, and she only has three teeth and. The same song is always playing on the radio or the box. It's always Patsy Cline, Crazy. And, because everybody else there is crazy. That's not the place you want to go at 3 o'clock in the morning. Trust me.
No, that doesn't sound like it. Anyway, man, we've only got a little bit left, and, you know, thanks to everybody who rang in tonight and everybody in the chat room for keeping things lively. Monday's a big day for us on the Horn because we're going to be the only live game in town. While everybody else is pumping out reruns on Memorial Day, the Head On Radio Network will be giving you a full-on afternoon and evening of live content. Isn't that right, Bruce?
That's right. While everyone else is grilling, we're going to be cooking. with gas.
While they're chilling, we're grilling, huh? What?
They're chilling, we're grilling. Yes, we have here on the Head On Radio Network, we're going to be live from 3 p.m. on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern on Monday till 1 a.m. Eastern. So that would be 12 noon Pacific until, 10 p.m. Pacific. So if you're interested in checking it, just get on the screen, the same thing that you're on right now, Monday, starting 12 Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern, with the Guy James Show. Guy will be on live from 3 to 5, and then it's me, Bruce Birch, with the preview of a show that will be, I'm going to say it, John. Should I say it?
Go for it.
Yeah! Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, this will be the first time you've ever heard this announcement on the Horn. In July, and we haven't nailed down the date yet, but it'll be sometime in July, I will be going over to a daily program on the Horn. It will be 5 until 7 p.m. in the afternoon. That would be 3 to 5 on the West Coast. No, that would be 2 to... Hell, I don't know.
They can figure it out.
You can figure it out. 2 to 4, I think, on the West Coast. That's correct. 2 to 4 on the West Coast. And that will be starting sometime in July, and you'll be hearing promos, et cetera, et cetera. But this coming Monday is actually going to be a preview, if you will, of the upcoming Horn lineup that should be taking effect sometime real soon. Again, probably in the middle of July at some point in that. We'll let you know. You'll hear me 5 to 7 on Monday, which will be sort of a sneak preview, and then you'll hear Bob Kincaid. Head on with Bob Kincaid, and that'll be 7 until 10 p.m., 4 until 7 on the West Coast. And then following Bob, John Fox.
Well, I'll be taking the night slot.
Yeah. John will be covering the witching hour on the East Coast of the United States. And that's 7 to 10 on the West Coast. And what time will that be, Australia?
Noon to 3 in the afternoon the next day. Excuse me? What?
So that'll be Tuesday.
Yes,
John will be on Tuesday.
Yes, it will be.
In Australia, and that'll be Monday in the United States.
Yeah, so I believe it works out too. In Sydney time, Guy will go on 5 a.m. And then you'll be on 7 a.m., Bob on 9 a.m., and me on for lunchtime, which is all very kind of interesting and unique. And not only that, because of the big event on Monday, Tomorrow night on the Head On Radio Network, as usual, before all things reconsidered, we're going to have one of our lecture series, and I do believe we're going to have Anthony Lowenstein spinning us to war, a replay of that, and there will be a brand new lecture to be played, I think, a couple of times next weekend on Wonkynomics, the bogus war and world economy. It's this guy should be really, really interesting, and I'll be having an interview with this gentleman whose name is not in front of me at the moment. And I believe we are letting Agnes have the night off, and you're going to run a best of program for all things tomorrow as we gear up for the big Monday event.
Yes, and actually the show that if anyone's interested, the show that I'll be running tomorrow night will be from March 26th. Of this year, and that is the show that I had Matt Rothschild, who is the editor-in-chief of the Progressive magazine, on All Things Reconsidered, and we had a very good conversation about impeachment, and actually the entire show was about the impeachment and of George W. Bush, and basically in about a half an hour interview, Matt laid out the grounds for impeachment, you know, in so many, just a really, really wonderful show. And so I encourage you to listen to that tomorrow night. We're going to give our wonderful, fantastic, amazing producer, Agnes Kincaid, the night off, because she's going to end up having to work 12 hours the next day. And, you know, we love her. We love her so much. No doubt,
and she's been going 7 days a week for how many weeks now? Anyone else would have tried to decapitate any of us talent in that amount of time, and she's had patience like you wouldn't believe with the rest of us. So so thank you, Agnes. You've done a killer job as usual. And what other credits do we have to cover here, Bruce? We're almost out of time.
Well, we are. The radio program is brought to you under the auspices of the. Wonderful members of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Ladies and gentlemen, they are building the American dream, and they're helping us to build it too by providing support for this radio network in so many ways. So thank you so much, guys up there in West Virginia, for all that you're doing to help create a new conversation in talk radio. Also, like to thank Agnes Kincaid, our wonderful and able and amazing producer, for doing such a wonderful job for us in helping John and I hit the airwaves and the stream waves, if you will. John?
And don't forget, we've got the lecture tomorrow night. That comes up 8 p.m. Eastern time, followed by that really, really great All Things Reconsidered. I suggest if you missed it that you should catch up on it, because I think it lays out that impeachment case beautifully. The show was announced by Miss Gail Thomas. Thank you, Gail. Archived at thewhiterosesociety.org, whiterosesociety.org. I'm the head engineer, not really important today. Thank you, Agnes, again. And we will be seeing you all next week. And before that, we will be seeing you all Monday for the Bighorn Memorial Day Gala. Wow, you beaut event. And thank you, Peter Godbold from Godbold Computer Services. You keep us alive. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And say good day, Bruce.
No, because Wayne didn't like it. Okay. Good
All right, everybody. Thanks for being with us again this week on Fourth Estate Radio. Don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. You got to get in the game. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you. See you on Monday.
question is, though,